Part 3. Apocalypsis. In the villa of Ormen, in the villa of Ormen, stands a solitary candle. Ah, ah. In the center of it all, in the center of it all, your eyes. On the day of execution, on the day of execution, only women kneel and smile. Ah, ah. At the center of it all, at the center of it all, your eyes, your eyes. Ah, ah, ah. Ah, ah, ah. Black Star, David Bowie. Chapter 1. Past Sins. 1. This time, instead of the alarm, a slow dawning of light drew Kira toward wakefulness. She opened her eyes. At first, no concern troubled her. She lay where she was, feeling calm and rested, content to wait. Then she saw the cat sitting by her feet, a whitish-gray Siamese with ears half-flattened and eyes slightly crossed. The cat hissed and jumped down to the deck. Kira, can you hear me? Kira, you awake? She turned her head and saw Falcone sitting next to her. The skin around his mouth was green, as if he'd been sick, and his face was drawn and hollow-eyed. He smiled at her. Welcome back. With a rush, her memory returned. The wallfish, FTL, the jellies, the staff of blue. Kira let out a cry and tried to bolt upright. Pressure around her chest and arms stopped her. It's safe, said Falcone. You can come out now. He rapped a knuckle against her shoulder. She looked down and saw a featureless sheath of black fibers encasing her body, holding her in place. Let me go, Kira thought, feeling suddenly claustrophobic. She wrenched her shoulders from side to side and let out another cry. With a dry, slithery sound, the soft blade relaxed its protective embrace and unwound the hard shell it had formed around her. A small cascade of dust slid from her sides and onto the floor, sending gray curlicues into the air. Falcone sneezed and rubbed his nose. Kira's muscles protested as she levered herself off the mattress and carefully sat upright. She had weight again, a welcome sensation. She tried to talk, but her mouth was too dry. All that came out was a frog-like croak. Here, said Falcone, and handed her a water pouch. She nodded, grateful, and sucked on the straw. Then she tried again. Did we make it? Her voice was rough from disuse. Falcone nodded. More or less. The ship has a few service alerts, but we're in one piece. Happy New Year and welcome to 2258. Bug hunt is just ahead.
Bug hunt?
It's what the Marines are calling the Star.
Are there any jellies or nightmares in the system?
Doesn't look like it. Relief, then, that they'd managed to beat the aliens.
Good.
Kira realized the Bach concertos were still playing.
Computer, music off, she said,
and the speakers fell silent.
How long since...
Since we arrived? 30 minutes, give or take. I came right over. Falcone licked his lips. He still looked queasy. Kira recognized the symptoms. Recovery after cryo was always a bitch, and it only got worse the longer you spent in the tube. She took another sip of water. How are you feeling? He asked.
Okay. A bit strange, but I'm okay. You?
He stood. Like 20 kilos of shit stuffed into a 10-kilo sack. I'll be fine, though.
Have we picked up anything on the sensors, or?
You can see for yourself. The system was definitely inhabited at one point, so there's that. You didn't send us nowhere. I'm going up to control. Join us there when you can.
As he walked to the open doorway, Kira said, Did everyone make it?
Yeah. Sick as dogs, but we're all here.
Then he left, and the door swung shut behind him. Kira took a moment to gather her thoughts. They'd made it. She'd made it. Hard to believe. She opened and closed her hands, rolled her shoulders, gently tensed muscles throughout her body, stiff from the past few days of hibernation, but everything seemed to be in working order.
"Hey, head case," she said. "You in one piece?"
After a brief pause, Grigorovich answered. Even with a synthesized voice, the ship mind sounded sluggish, groggy.
"I was in fractures before. I am in fractures now. But the pieces still form the same broken picture."
Kira grunted. "Yeah, you're fine." She tried to check her overlays, and nothing came up. After two more tries, she blinked, but she couldn't feel the contacts Vishal had given her. Nor could she feel them when she touched the tip of a finger against her right eye. "Crap," she said. The soft blade must have removed or absorbed the lenses sometime during the past few weeks of her long sleep. Eager to see the system they'd arrived in, she dressed, splashed some water on her face, and hurried out of the cabin. She swung by the galley to get some more water and grab a pair of ration bars. Chewing on one, she climbed up to control. All the crew was there, and the entropist, too. Like Falcone, they looked haggard, hair tousled, dark circles under their eyes, and a hint of nausea in their expressions. Sparrow looked the weakest, and Kira reminded herself that the woman had gone through surgery before entering cryo. Everything that had happened in 61 Cygni seemed distant and hazy now, but Kira knew that from the point of view of the crew, they had just left the system. For them, it was as if the last 3 months didn't exist. For her, the months were far more real. Even when in her artificial slumber, she'd retained a sense of the passage of time. She could feel the hours and days stretching out behind them, as tangible as their trail through space. 61 Cygni was no longer an immediate experience, and Adra before that, even less so. The inevitable accumulation of time had dulled the once sharp pain of her grief. Her memories of the deaths on Adra still hurt, and always would, but they seemed thin and faded, drained of the vividness that had caused her so much anguish. Everyone glanced at her as she entered control, and then they returned their attention to the hollow projected over the central table. Filling the hollow was a model of the system they'd just entered. Kira leaned against the edge of the table as she studied the image. 7 planets nested around the small, dim star, 1 gas giant and 6 terrestrial. The rocky planets were crammed in close to the star. The farthest one out orbited at only 0.043 AU. Then there was a gap, and a sparse asteroid field, and the gas giant at 0.061 AU. Closer to the star, Bughunt, a second, thinner band of debris occupied the space between the second and third planets. A chill of recognition crawled down Kira's spine. She knew this place. She'd seen it before, in her dreams, and more. Her other flesh, the soft blade, had walked among those planets many times in the far distant past. With recognition, she also felt vindication. She hadn't imagined or misinterpreted where they needed to go, and the soft blade hadn't deluded her. She'd been right about the location of the Staff of Blue, assuming it was still in the system after all these years. The Darmstadt and the Wallfish were both marked in the hollow with bright icons. But Kira also saw a third icon, near the Markov limit, which, because of the low mass of the star and the compact orbits of the planets, was about 2 days' thrust at 1G from Bughunt, assuming one intended to slow to a stop. Otherwise, it would only take a day and a half. "What's that?" she said, pointing at the icon. Falcone said, "The Darmstadt dropped a relay beacon as soon as it popped out of FTL. That way, if something happens to us, we might still be able to get a signal out." Made sense, although it would take a long time to get a signal back to the League. The faster an FTL signal, the weaker it was. One strong enough to make it all the way to 61 Cygni in a coherent form would be even slower than a spaceship like the Wallfish. She'd have to check the numbers, but it could be years before the signal arrived. Falcone gestured at the hollow. "We're picking up evidence of structures throughout the system." Even under the soft blade, Kira felt goosebumps erupt across her body. Finding the Xeno and now this? It was what she had dreamed about when she was a kid. Of making discoveries as big and important as the great beacon on Talos 7. The circumstances weren't what she would have wished for, but even so, if humanity survived the war with the jellies and the nightmares, the things they could learn. She cleared her throat. "Any currently active?" "Hard to tell. Doesn't seem like it." Falcone zoomed in on the band of debris between the second and third planets.
Check this out. Grigorovich, tell them what you told me.
The ship mind answered directly.
The composition of the flotsam seems to indicate it's artificial. It contains an unusually high percentage of metals, as well as other materials that, based off albedo if nothing else, cannot be natural in origin.
All that? Said Kira, amazed. The amount of stuff was staggering. There was an entire lifetime's worth of study here. Several lifetimes.
Hua Chong altered the view of the hollow as she studied it.
Maybe it was a Dyson ring.
I didn't think any material was strong enough to make a ring that big, said Vishal.
Hua Chong shook her head.
Does not have to be a solid ring. Could be lots of satellites or stations put all around the star. See?
Ah.
Nielsen said, how old do you think it is?
Old, whispered Grigorovich. Very, very old.
An uncomfortable silence filled the room. Then Trigg said,
what do you think happened to the aliens here?
A war?
Nothing good, I'm sure, said Falcone.
He looked at Kira.
You're gonna have to tell us where to go. We could spend forever wandering around looking for the staff.
Kira studied the projection. No answer jumped to mind. The Xeno didn't seem willing or able to tell her. It had helped them find the system. Now it seemed they were on their own. When she had been silent for a while, Falcone said,
Kira.
He was starting to sound worried.
Give me a minute.
She thought. Most of the memories the Softblade had showed her of the staff had seemed to take place on or around one of the planets in the system. A brownish planet with bands of circling clouds.
There. The fourth planet. It had the color, it had the clouds, and it was in Bug Hunt's habitable zone, if just barely.
She checked. No evidence of an orbiting station. Oh well. That didn't mean anything. It could have been destroyed. She highlighted the planet.
I can't tell you the exact location, but this is where we should start.
You sure? Falcone asked. She gave him a look and he raised his hands.
Okay then, I'll let Akawe know. What are we searching for? Cities? Buildings?
She continued the list for him.
Monuments, statues, public works, basically anything artificial.
Got it. The walls seemed to twist around them as Grigorovich adjusted their course.
Captain, said Nielsen, getting to her feet.
If anything, she looked worse than before.
I'm going to...
He nodded. I'll let you know if there's news. The first officer crossed her arms as if cold and left the control room. For a minute, no one else talked as Falcone had a one-sided conversation with the Darmstadt. Then he grunted and said,
All right, we have a plan, Kira. We're going to feed you images of the planet's surface. We need you to look at it, see if you can figure out where to land. The planet is tidally locked with Bug Hunt. They all are. But maybe we'll get lucky with the side facing us. Meantime, we're gonna head for the asteroid belt. Looks like there's plenty of ice flying around, so we can crack some hydrogen and refill our tanks.
Kira looked at Vishal. I'll need a new set of contacts. The suit disappeared mine on the way here. The doctor pushed himself out of his chair.
Come with me then, Ms. Kira.
As she followed him to sickbay, Kira couldn't help feeling a sense of unease and displacement at how far they were from the League. Not only that, it was alien territory, even if the aliens were long dead. The vanished, she thought, remembering the term from the jelly ship. But vanished to where? And were the makers of the soft blade members of the jellies or the nightmares or some other, older species? She hoped they would find the answers on the planet. In sickbay, Vishal gave her another set of contacts, and she said,
Can you print up another few pairs? I'll probably lose these on the way back.
Yes, yes, he bobbed his head. Do you still need your nose to be reset, Miss Kira? I can do it now, just...
He held his hands parallel and made a short, jerking motion.
Shh, and it will be done.
No, it's okay.
Later. She didn't want to deal with the pain at the moment. And besides, she felt a certain reluctance to do anything to fix her nose. Although if asked, she couldn't have said why.
2. Back in the galley, Kira made herself some chell
and then she sat at one of the bench tables and inserted the contacts. Fortunately, all of the data from the previous pair had uploaded into the ship's servers, so she hadn't lost anything. She made a note to back up everything in at least two different places. Once connected, alerts marking incoming messages from both Grigorovich and the Darmstadt ship mind Horstja Ubuto appeared in the corner of her vision. Kira opened them to find a collection of telescopic images of the fourth planet, or Planet E, as it was labeled, from both ships. Appended to the first set was a note.
If you need a different type of imaging, just ask. Horstja Ubuto.
Then Kira settled in to study the surface of Planet E. There was a lot to study. It was 7/10 the diameter of Earth and nearly the same density. That meant water, and possibly native life. She felt sure the planet had a proper name, but no sense of it came from the soft blade. The pictures she had were mostly from the dark side of the planet. Only a sliver of the Terminator between night and day was visible from their current position. The Terminator was the most likely place for a city or installation of some kind, as it would be the most temperate area, balanced between the scorching heat of one side and the frigid cold of the other. The near side of the planet was brown and orange. Vast canyons scraped the surface, and blackish patches marked where Kira thought giant lakes might lie. Ice crusted the poles, more away from the star than toward. The ship's telescopes weren't the largest. Neither the Walfish nor the Darmstadt were scientific vessels, and given the distance, the resolution of the images wasn't the highest. But Kira did her best, examining each one for anything that seemed familiar. Unfortunately, nothing struck a chord. There was evidence of habitation, helpfully outlined for her by Grigorovich and Horstja Ubuto, faint lines that might be roads or canals along a section of the northern hemisphere, but nothing notable. She lost herself in the images, barely paying attention to her surroundings. When she went to drink the chell, it was already cold, which annoyed her. She sipped at it anyway. The door to the galley scraped open, and Trig entered.
"Hey," he said. "Did you see what Grigorovich found?"
Kira blinked, slightly disoriented as she cleared her overlays.
"No. What?" "Here."
He bounced over to her table and activated the built-in display. An image popped up of what appeared to be part of a space station, now broken and abandoned. The shape of it resembled no human-made structure. It was long and jagged, like the length of a natural-grown crystal. The station obviously hadn't spun in order to create a sense of weight for its inhabitants. That meant either they had artificial gravity, or the aliens hadn't minded spending their time in zero-G.
"Well," said Kira slowly, "I think we know one thing."
"Yeah?"
said the kid. "Sure doesn't look like the ships, the jellies, or the nightmares are building these days. Either they've changed styles or—
"Another species,"
Trigg beamed, as if this was the best piece of news ever.
"The Vanished, right? The captain told me."
"That's right," she cocked her head.
"You're enjoying this, huh?"
"Because it's cool,"
he poked at the display.
"How many alien civilizations do you think there are out there? In the whole galaxy, that is."
"I have no idea.
Where did Grigorovich find the station?"
"Floating in the Dyson ring."
Kira drained the last of her chell. "How's your wrist, by the way?" The kid didn't have a cast anymore. Trig rolled his hand in a circle.
"All better now. Doc says he wants to see me again in a few weeks, real time. But other than that, I'm good to go."
"Glad to hear it." The kid went to get some food, and Kira returned to studying the survey images of Planet E. There was already a new batch waiting for her. The work wasn't so different from the prep they'd done before arriving at Adrastea. Out of habit, Kira found herself scanning for evidence of flora and fauna. There was oxygen in the atmosphere, which was encouraging, and nitrogen, too. Thermal imaging seemed to show what might be areas of vegetation near the Terminator line, but as with all tidally locked planets, it was difficult to be sure given the screwy atmospheric convections. While she worked, the crew came in and out of the galley. Kira exchanged a few words with them, but for the most part, she kept her focus on the pictures. Nielsen never appeared, and she wondered if the first officer was still ill from cryo. New pictures kept tumbling in, and as the spaceships grew closer to Planet E, the resolution improved. Mid-afternoon ship time, Kira received a message from the Darmstadt saying,
"Of interest? Horstja Ubuto."
Attached was an image from the southern hemisphere that showed a complex of buildings secreted in a fold of protective mountains, smack dab in the middle of the Terminator. At the sight of it, Kira felt a chill of ancient memories, fear, uncertainty, and the sadness born of regret. And she saw the Highmost ascend a pedestal, bright in the dawn everlasting. A small gasp escaped her, and Kira felt a sudden certainty. She swallowed hard before opening a line to Falcone. I found it, or I found something. Show me. After studying the map, he said. Seems like I keep asking this, but are you sure? As I said before we left, as sure as I can be. Okay, I'll talk with Akawe. The line clicked dead. Kira made herself another cup of chow and warmed her hands around it while she waited. Not 10 minutes later, Falcone's voice sounded over the intercom throughout the ship. Listen up, everyone. Change of plans. We have a destination on Planet E, courtesy of Kira. We're gonna do a burn straight there and drop off Kira and a team to check out the location while the Wallfish and the Darmstadt continue back out to the asteroid belt to refuel. It'll only take 4 or 5 hours to reach the belt, so the ships won't be too far away if we're needed.
3. Kira returned to control and stayed there for the rest of the afternoon, watching as new discoveries continued to pop up on their screens. There were scores of artificial structures throughout the system, both on the planets and in space, monuments to a lost civilization. None appeared to have power. By the gas giant floated the hull of what looked to be a ship. By Planet E, a cluster of junked satellites, parked in what would have been a geostationary orbit if the planet hadn't been tidally locked. And of course, there was the Dyson ring, if that's what it was, which seemed to be filled with technological relics.
This place, said Vera, is a treasure house beyond compare, finished Joris.
Kira agreed.
We'll be studying it for centuries. Do you think these were the aliens who made the Great Beacon?
The entropists inclined their heads.
Perhaps. It very well could be.
Dinner that night was a subdued, informal affair. No one bothered cooking. Everyone's stomach but Kira's was still in a delicate state from cryo. As a result, it was prepackaged rations across the board, which made for a monotonous, if healthy, meal. The Marines still didn't join them, nor did Nielsen. The first officer's absence was conspicuous. Without her quiet, steady presence, the conversation around the tables was sharper, more hard-edged.
Tomorrow, said Vishal, I would like to see you, Miss Sparrow, for a checkup. It is necessary to make sure your new organs are working well.
Sparrow bobbed her head in an imitation of Vishal and said,
Sure thing, Doc.
Then an evil little grin spread across her face.
Just using this as an excuse to get your hands on me, aren't ya?
Color bloomed on Vishal's cheeks and he stuttered.
Miss, I would, that is no. No, that would not be professional.
Trig laughed through a mouthful of food.
Ha, look, he's blushing.
Sparrow laughed as well, and a faint smile appeared on Hua Chung's broad face. They continued to tease the doctor, and Kira could see him getting more and more frustrated and angry, but he never snapped, never lashed out. She didn't understand it. If he just stood up for himself, the others would knock it off, or at least back off for a while. She'd seen it plenty of times before on the mining outposts. Guys who didn't punch back always ended up getting picked on more. It was a law of nature. Falcone didn't interfere, not directly. But she noticed how he unobtrusively steered the conversation in a different direction. As they took up another topic, Vishal sank back in his seat, as if hoping no one would notice him. While they talked, Kira went to the entropists, who were hunched over a bluish, oblong-shaped object on their table, turning it over as if trying to find a key or a latch to open it. She sat next to Vera. What is that? She asked, indicating the object. It was the size of both her fists combined. The entropist peered at her, owlish under the hoods of their robes.
We found this, said Joris.
On the ship of the jelly, said Vera.
We think it is a processor, or control module for a computer. But to be honest, We are not entirely sure.
Kira glanced back at Falcone. Does the captain know you have this? The entropists smiled, mirroring each other's expression.
Not this specifically, they said, their voices coming in stereo. But he knows we salvaged several pieces of equipment off the ship.
May I? Asked Kira and held out her hands. After a moment, the entropists relented and allowed her to take the object. It was denser than it looked. The surface was pitted slightly, and there was a smell of salt to it. Kira frowned.
If the Xeno knows what this is, it's not telling me. Where did you find it?
The entropist showed her via footage from their implants.
The aspect of the void, said Kira.
The English translation tasted strange on her tongue. It was accurate, but it failed to capture the feel of the jelly original.
That was the name of the room. I didn't go in there, but I saw the sign.
Vera carefully took back the oblong object.
What, in this instance,
does the word void refer to? Likewise, what does
the word aspect?
She hesitated. I'm not sure. Maybe communication? Sorry, don't think I can help you any more than that. The entropists dipped their heads.
You have given us more than we had previously. We shall continue to ponder upon this matter. May your path always lead to knowledge, prisoner.
Knowledge to freedom, Kira replied. When dinner was over and people were dispersing, she contrived to get a moment alone with Falcone by the sink.
Is Nielsen all right?
She asked in a low tone. His hesitation confirmed her suspicions.
It's nothing. She'll be fine tomorrow.
Really?
Kira gave him a look.
Really?
She wasn't convinced. Do you think she'd like it if I brought her some tea?
That's probably not a good idea.
Falcone stopped himself as he dried off a plate.
You know what? I take it back. I think Audrey would appreciate the gesture.
He reached up into a cupboard and removed a packet.
This is the stuff she likes. Ginger.
For a moment, Kira wondered if he was setting her up. Then she decided it didn't matter. Upon fixing the tea, she followed Falcone's directions to Nielsen's cabin, trying to keep the liquid from sloshing too much in the two safety cups she carried. She knocked, and when there was no response, knocked again and said,
Ms. Nielsen?
It's me, Kira.
Go away.
The first officer's voice was strained. I brought you some ginger tea. After a few seconds, the door creaked open to reveal Nielsen standing in burgundy pajamas and a pair of matching slippers. Her normally immaculate hair was tied back in a shoddy bun. Dark rings surrounded her eyes, and her skin was pale and bloodless even beneath her spacer's tan.
See?
Said Kira and held out a cup.
As promised. I thought you might like something hot to drink.
Nielsen stared at the cup as if it were a foreign artifact. Then her expression eased, if only slightly, and she accepted it and moved aside.
Guess you'd better come in.
The interior of her cabin was clean and tidy. The only personal effect was a hollow on the desk. Three children, two boys and a girl, in their early teens. On the walls, overlays created the illusion of oval, brass-framed windows looking out upon a vista of endless clouds, orange, brown, and pale cream. Kira sat on the lone chair while Nielsen sat on the bed.
I don't know if you like honey, but
Kira held out a small packet. The movement of the clouds kept catching her eyes, distracting her.
I do, actually.
While Nielsen stirred the honey into the tea, Kira studied her. She'd never seen the first officer so frail before. If you want, I can get you some food from the galley. It won't take more than... Nielsen shook her head.
I wouldn't be able to keep it down.
Bad reaction to the cryo, huh?
You could say that,
said Nielsen. Can I get you something else? Maybe from the doctor?
Nielsen took a sip. That's very thoughtful, but no. I just need a good sleep and I'll be...
Her breath hitched, and a spasm of pain knotted her face. She bent forward, putting her head between her knees, her breath coming in ragged gasps. Alarmed, Kira darted to her side, but Nielsen held up a hand, and Kira stopped, uncertain what to do. She was just about to call for Vishal when Nielsen straightened. Her eyes were watery, and her expression was tight.
"Damn it," she said in an undertone. Then louder, "It's okay. I'm fine."
"Like hell you are," said Kira. "You couldn't even move. That's more than just cryo sickness."
"Yes." Nielsen leaned back against the wall behind the bed.
"What is it? Cramps?"
Kira couldn't imagine why the other woman would have her periods turned on, but if she did. Nielsen uttered a short laugh.
"I wish."
She blew on her tea and took a long drink. Still on edge, Kira returned to the chair and studied the other woman.
"Do you want to talk about it?"
"Not particularly."
An uncomfortable silence developed between them. Kira took a drink of her own tea. She wanted to press Nielsen harder, but she knew it would be a mistake.
"Have you seen all this stuff we found in the system? It's amazing. We'll be studying it for centuries.
As long as we don't get wiped out."
"There is that small detail."
Nielsen peered at Kira over the top of her cup, eyes sharp and feverish.
"Do you know why I agreed to this trip?
I could have fought Falcone on it. If I'd tried hard enough, I could have even convinced him to refuse Ikawe's offer. He listens to me when it comes to things like this."
"No, I don't know," said Kira.
"Why?"
The first officer pointed at the hollow of the kids on the desk.
"Because of them."
"Is that you and your brothers?"
"No, they're my children."
"I didn't know you had a family," said Kira, surprised.
"Grandchildren, even."
"You're joking, really?"
Nielsen smiled a little.
"I'm quite a bit older than I look."
"I never would have guessed you'd had stem shots."
"You mean my nose and ears?"
Nielsen touched them.
"I had them fixed about 10 years ago. It was the thing to do where I lived."
She looked out the window overlaid on the wall, and her gaze grew distant, as if she saw something other than the clouds of Venus.
"Coming here to bug hunt was the only thing I could do to help protect my family. That's why I agreed to it. I just wish, well, it doesn't matter now."
"What doesn't?" said Kira, gentle. A sadness settled over Nielsen, and she sighed.
"I just wish I could have talked with them before we left. Who knows what it's going to be like when we get back?"
Kira understood. "Do they live at Sol?"
"Yes. Venus and Mars."
Nielsen picked at a spot on her palm.
"My daughter is still on Venus. You might have seen the jellies attacked there a while back. Fortunately, it wasn't close to her, but..."
"What's her name?"
"Jan."
"I'm sure they'll be fine. Of all the places they could be, Sol is probably the safest."
Nielsen gave her a don't bullshit me look.
"You saw what happened on Earth. I don't think anywhere is safe these days."
In an attempt to distract her, Kira said,
"So how did you end up on the Wallfish then? So far away from your family."
Nielsen studied the reflections in her cup.
"Lots of reasons. The publishing company I worked for declared bankruptcy. New management restructured, fired half the staff, canceled our pensions."
Nielsen shook her head. 28 years spent working for them.
All gone. The pension was bad enough, but I lost my health coverage, which was a problem, given my particular challenges.
But isn't...
Of course. Basic access is guaranteed as long as you're a citizen in good standing. Even sometimes if you're not. But basic coverage isn't what I needed.
Nielsen glanced at Kira from the corner of her eyes.
And now you're wondering just how sick I am and whether it's contagious.
Kira raised an eyebrow.
Well, I assume Falcone wouldn't have let you on board if you were carrying some deadly flesh-eating bacteria.
The other woman nearly laughed, and then she pressed a hand against her chest and made a pained face.
It's not that dire. At least not for anyone else.
Is it terminal?
Life is terminal, said Nielsen dryly. Even with stem shots. Entropy always wins in the end.
Kira raised her cup.
to the entropists, then. May they find a way to reverse the time-ordered decay of all things.
Hear, hear. And Nielsen clinked cups with her.
Although I can't say the prospect of life unending appeals to me.
No, it would be nice to have some choice in the matter.
After another sip and another pause, Nielsen said, My condition was a gift from my parents, believe it or not.
How so?
The first officer rubbed her face, and the true depths of her exhaustion became evident. They were trying to do the right thing. People always are. They just forget the old adage regarding the problem with good intentions and the road to hell.
That's a rather cynical view.
I'm in a rather cynical mood. Nielsen straightened her legs out on the bed. It seemed to hurt. Before I was born, the laws on gene hacking weren't as strict as they are now. My parents wanted to give their child, me, every possible advantage. What parent wouldn't?
Kira instantly grasped the problem.
Oh, no. Oh, yes. So they packed me full of every known gene sequence for intelligence, including a few artificial ones that had just been developed.
Did it work?
I've never needed to use a calculator, if that's what you mean. There were unintended side effects, though. The doctors aren't quite sure what happened, but some part of the alterations triggered my immune system, set it off like a pressure alarm in a dome that's been ripped open. Nielsen's expression became sardonic. So I can calculate how fast the air is rushing out without having to check my math, but there's nothing I can do to keep myself from asphyxiating. Metaphorically speaking.
Nothing, Kira said.
Nielsen shook her head. The doctors tried fixing the conflicts with retroviral treatments, but they can only do so much. The genes changed tissue up here. She tapped the side of her head. Delete them, remove them, or even just edit them, and it could kill me or mess with my memories or my personality. Her lips twisted. Life is full of little ironies like that.
I'm sorry.
It happens. I'm not the only one, although most of the others didn't make it past 30. As long as I take my pills, it isn't too bad, but
some days.
Nielsen winced. Some days the pills don't do much of anything. She picked up her pillow and wedged it behind her back. Her tone was bitter as arsenic. When your body isn't your own, it's worse than any prison. Her eyes flicked toward Kira. You know. She did know. And she also knew dwelling on it wouldn't help. So what happened after you got laid off?
Nielsen drained the last of her tea in a single gulp. She put the empty cup on the edge of the desk.
The bills started piling up and, well, my husband, Saras, left. I don't blame him, not really. But there I was, having to start all over again at 63. Her laugh could have cut glass. I don't recommend it.
Kira made a sympathetic noise. And the first officer said,
I couldn't find a job that suited me on Venus, so I left.
Just like that?
The steel inside Nielsen came to the fore again. Exactly like that. I spent some time moving around Sol, trying to find a steady position. Eventually, I ended up at Harcourt Station out by Titan, and that's where I met Falcone and talked him into bringing me on as first officer.
Now there's a conversation I would have liked to hear, said Kira.
Nielsen chuckled. I may have been a bit pushy. I practically had to force my way onto the Wharfish. The ship was a bit of a mess when I arrived. It needed organizing and scheduling, and those have always been my strong points.
Kira toyed with the extra packet of honey she'd brought.
Can I ask you a question? It's a little late to be asking for permission, don't you think?
About Falcone.
Nielsen's expression grew more guarded.
Go ahead.
What's the story behind those scars on his arms? Why didn't he get them fixed?
Ah. Nielsen shifted her legs, trying to find a more comfortable position.
Why don't you ask him yourself? I wasn't sure if it was a sensitive subject.
Nielsen stared at her with an overly direct gaze. Her eyes, Kira noticed for the first time, had flecks of green in them.
If Falcone feels like telling you, he will. Either way, it's not really my story to share. I'm sure you understand.
Kira didn't press the issue, but Nielsen's reticence only increased her curiosity. After that, they spent a pleasant half hour chatting about the intricacies of living and working on Venus. To Kira, the planet seemed beautiful and exotic and dangerous in an alluring way. Nielsen's time in the publishing industry there had been so different from Kira's profession. It made her consider the vast array of personal experiences that existed throughout the League. At last, when Kira's cup was empty, and Nielsen seemed in relatively good cheer, Kira stood to leave. The first officer caught her by the wrist. "Thank you for the tea. It was very nice of you. I mean it." The praise warmed Kira's heart. "Anytime. It was my pleasure." Nielsen smiled then, a genuine smile, and Kira smiled in return. 4. Back in her own cabin, Kira paused in front of the mirror by the sink. The dim ship night lighting cast heavy shadows across her face, which made the kink in her nose stand out in high relief. She felt the crooked flesh. It would be easy to fix. A hard jerk would return it to normal, and then the soft blade would heal her face the way it should have the first time. But she didn't want that, and now she understood why. The Xeno had erased every mark on her body, every bump and line and freckle, an odd bit of jiggle. It had removed the physical record of her life and replaced it with the meaningless coat of fibers that retained no stamp of experience. So much it had taken from her. She didn't want to lose more. Keeping a crooked nose was her choice, her way of reshaping the flesh they shared. It also served as a reminder of past sins, ones she was determined not to repeat. Flush with that determination, as well as a surfeit of images from the system they'd arrived at, Kira threw herself down and, even after 3 months of mostly hibernating, fell asleep. She and her joined flesh, not a grasper, but a giver, walked as witness behind the highmost among the field of ill-shaped growths, cancerous intentions that bore poisonous fruit, and the highmost raised the staff of blue and said a single, cutting word, "No." Down the staff then came, struck the heaving earth. A circle of gray expanded about the highmost as each mutated cell tore itself apart. The stench of death and putrefaction smothered the field, and sorrow bent the highmost. An earlier fracture, one of her siblings stood before the assembled heptarchy in their high arched presence chamber. The highmost descended to the patterned floor and touched the staff of blue to the blood-smeared brow of her sibling. "You are no longer worthy." Then flesh parted from flesh as the other soft blade flowed away from the staff, fleeing its power and leaving the body of its bonded mate exposed, vulnerable. For there was no denying the staff of blue. Another disjunction, and she found herself standing beside the highmost upon the observation deck of an enormous starship. Before and below them hung a rocky planet, green and red with swarms of life. There was a wrongness to it, though, a feel of threat that made her wish she was elsewhere, as if the planet itself were malevolent. The highmost raised the staff of blue once again. "Enough." The staff angled forward. A flash of sapphire light sent shadows streaming. And the planet vanished. In the distance, well past the planet's previous location, a patch of starlight twisted, and with it twisted her stomach, for she knew what the distortion heralded. Kira woke with a pounding heart. She stayed under the blankets for several minutes, reviewing the memories from the soft blade. Then she rolled upright and put a call through to both Falcone and Akawe. As soon as they answered, she said, "We have to find the Staff of Blue." Then she told them of her dream. Falcone said, "If even only part of that is true, then it's even more important we keep the jellies from getting their tentacles on this tech," said Akawe. The call ended, and Kira checked their location, still on course for Planet E. "It needs a better name," she thought. At the current distance, and without magnification, the planet was still just a gleaming dot in the ship's cameras, no different from the other nearby dots that marked the rest of the system's closely packed planets. During the night, the ship mines had found even more structures scattered about Bug Hunt. The system had clearly been a base for long-term settlement. Kira glanced over the newest discoveries, but saw nothing immediately revelatory, so she put them aside for later study. Then she checked her messages. There were two waiting for her. The first, as she'd half expected, was from Grigorovich.
"The dust from your alien companion is clogging my filters again, meatbag. Grigorovich."
She replied, "Apologies, I didn't have time to clean yesterday. I'll see what I can do. Kira."
"No matter, you'll likely just make a mess of it. Leave your door unlocked, and I shall send one of my tricksy little service bots to sweep up your leavings. Would you like your sheets turned down as well? Yes or no, Grigorovich?"
"No, thank you. I can manage just fine myself, Kira."
"As you wish, meatbag, Grigorovich."
The other message was from Sparrow.
"Let's do this. Cargo hold. I'll be waiting. Sparrow."
Kira ran a hand over the back of her head. She'd been expecting to hear from Sparrow. Whatever the woman had in store for her, it wasn't going to be easy. But Kira was okay with that. She was curious to find out if her efforts with the Softblade were going to pay off. If nothing else, interfacing with the Xeno ought to be easier now that she was fully awake and properly fed. Kira fetched her morning chow from the galley and then headed down to the hold. The Marines were there, prepping their gear for the upcoming trip to the surface of Planet E. The squad greeted her with nods and grunts and even a salute on the part of Sanchez. Whether it was their military augments or their natural constitutions, Kira didn't know, but none of the men looked as drained from cryo as the crew of the Wallfish. As promised, Sparrow was in the small gym hidden within the racks of equipment. She was chewing gum while doing painful-looking crunches on a mat.
"Rehab,"
she said in response to Kira's querying look. After finishing her set, Sparrow rolled onto her knees.
"So?"
she said.
3 months. Were you able to keep up with your training?"
"Yes."
"And? How'd it go?"
Kira knelt as well.
"Good, I think.
It was hard to tell at times, but I tried my damnedest. I really did." A crooked little smile cut Sparrow's face.
"Show me."
So Kira did. She pressed and pulled and ran and otherwise performed all the exercises Sparrow asked of her, while also shaping and reshaping the Softblade the whole time. To Kira's satisfaction, she did well. Not perfect, but very close. She never lost control of the Xeno to the point where it stabbed or lashed out. At the most, it formed a few studs or ripples in response to the stresses imposed on her body, and she was able to form intricate shapes and patterns with its fibers. It felt as if the organism was working with her, not against her, which was a welcome change. Sparrow watched with focused intensity. She gave no praise and showed no sign of approval, and when Kira continued to meet her demands, she merely asked for more. More weight, more complexity with the Softblade. More time under tension. More. At last, Kira was ready to call it quits. She felt that she had done quite enough to demonstrate her new skills. But Sparrow had other ideas. The woman hopped down from the bench where she was sitting and strode over to where Kira was standing by the weight rack, panting and sweating. She stopped only centimeters away, too close for comfort. Kira fought the urge to step back.
"Make the most detailed pattern that you can,"
said Sparrow. Kira was tempted to argue. She resisted, though, and, after thinking, willed the soft blade to imitate the fractal it had shown her on more than one occasion. The surface of the suit rippled and deformed into an almost microscopically detailed design. Holding it in place wasn't easy, but then, that was the point. Kira sucked in her breath.
"Okay, what else do—"
Sparrow slapped her cheek. Hard. Shocked, Kira blinked, tears forming in her left eye, the side Sparrow had hit.
"What the—"
Sparrow slapped her again, a bright, icy shock that sent stars shooting across Kira's vision. She felt the mask start to crawl across her face, and the soft blade start to spike out, and, with a mighty effort, she held it in place. It felt as if she were holding a high-tension wire with a metric ton of weight at the other end, pulling her forward, threatening to snap. She set her jaw and glared at Sparrow, now knowing what the woman was up to. Sparrow grinned, an evil little grin that did nothing but piss off Kira even more. It was the sadistic superiority of the expression that really got to her. Sparrow slapped her a third time. Kira saw the blow coming. She could have ducked or flinched or protected herself with the soft blade. She wanted to. She also could have struck back with the suit. The Xeno was eager to fight, eager to stop the threat. A moment's lapse, and Sparrow would have been lying on the floor, blood oozing from a half dozen different wounds. Kira could see it in her mind. She took another breath, and then forced herself to smile. Not an angry smile, not an evil smile. A flat, calm smile that said, "You can't break me." She meant it, too. She and the soft blade were working together, and Kira felt a solid sense of control. Not only over the Xeno, but herself. Sparrow grunted and stepped back. The tension in her shoulder slacked.
"Not bad, Nevarez. Not bad."
Kira allowed the pattern to melt into the surface of the soft blade. "That was really fucking risky." A quick laugh from Sparrow.
"It worked, didn't it?"
She returned to the bench and sat. And if it hadn't? In the back of her mind, Kira couldn't help but feel a sense of triumph. She really had made progress on the way to Bug Hunt. All those practice sessions alone in the dark had been worth it. Sparrow clipped a bar attachment to the weight machine.
"You go in Dirtside tomorrow to poke around in an alien city, looking for some scary-ass alien superweapon. Shit could go sideways real fast, and you know it. If you couldn't handle a little something like this," she shrugged, "you shouldn't leave the wallfish. Besides, I had confidence in you."
"You're crazy, you know that?" Bakira smiled as she said it.
"Nothing new there."
Sparrow started to do pull-downs on the weight machine, using fairly light weight. She did a set of 10 and then stopped and hunched over, eyes screwed shut. "How's your recovery going?" Kira asked. Sparrow made a disgusted face.
"Well enough. The doc kept me at a slightly higher metabolic rate than normal in cryo, which helped with the healing, but it's still going to be another few weeks before I'm ready to get back in an exo. That really burns me."
"Why?" said Kira.
"Because,"
said Sparrow, massaging her side where she'd been injured.
"I can't fight like this."
"You shouldn't have to. Besides, we've got the UMC with us." Sparrow snorted.
"You grow up in a colony or what?"
"Yeah. What's that got to do with it?"
"Then you ought to know you can't offload responsibility on someone else. You have to be able to take care of yourself when shit goes down."
Kira thought about that for a moment as she put away the weight she'd been holding. "Sometimes we can't, and that's when we have to rely on other people.
That's how societies work."
Sparrow sucked her lips against her teeth in an unpleasant little smile.
"Maybe. Doesn't mean I have to like being disabled."
"No, it doesn't." 5. As they left the hold, they passed by the Marines, and Kira greeted them as she had on the way in. The men started to reply, but then they saw Sparrow, and their expressions grew cold. Tatupoa jerked his chin toward her. His tattoos gleamed like sapphire wires amid the shadows cast by the storage racks.
"Yeah, we looked you up. Just keep walking, Gashead. We don't need your like around here."
"Private,"
barked Hawes.
"That's enough."
But he avoided looking at Sparrow, same as the others.
"Yes, sir."
Sparrow kept walking and didn't react, as if she hadn't heard. Confused, Kira kept pace with her. Once out in the hall, she said,
"What the hell was that about?"
To her surprise, Sparrow leaned with one hand against the wall. The shorter woman looked as if she were going to be sick. Somehow Kira doubted it had anything to do with cryo.
"Hey, are you okay?" said Kira.
Sparrow shivered.
"Oh yeah, blasting on full jets."
She ground the heel of her free hand against the corners of her eyes. Not knowing what else to do, Kira said,
"How did they figure out who you are?"
"Service records.
Every ship in the fleet carries a full set of them, aside from the black bag spec ops grunts. But they ran my picture through the files. Wouldn't be hard.
Sparrow sniffed and pushed herself off the wall.
You tell anyone about this, and I'll kill you.
The jellies might get to me before then. What's gashead mean? Nothing good, I guess. A bitter smile twisted Sparrow's mouth.
Gashead is what you call someone you think deserves to be spaced. The blood boils off, turns to gas. Get it?
Kira eyed her, trying to read between the lines. So why you?
Doesn't matter,
Sparrow muttered, straightening up. She started to walk away, but Kira stepped in front of her. I think it does, Kira said. Sparrow stared her straight in the eyes, jaw muscles working.
Get out of my way, Navarez.
Not until you tell me, and there's no way you can force me to move.
Fine, then I'll just sit here.
And Sparrow dropped into a cross-legged position. Kira crouched down beside her. If you can't work with the Marines, I need to know why.
You ain't the captain.
No, but we're all putting our lives on the line here. What is it, Sparrow? It can't be that bad. The woman snorted.
You have a seriously faulty imagination if that's what you think. Fine. Screw it. You want the truth? I got kicked out of the UMCM for cowardice before the enemy. Spent 7 months in lockup as a result. There, you happy?
I don't believe you, said Kira.
The specific charges were abandonment of my post, cowardice in the face of the enemy, and striking a commanding officer.
Sparrow crossed her arms, defiant.
That's why, gashead. No Marine wants to serve with a coward.
You're not a coward, said Kira, earnest. I have seen you in combat. Hell, you went right after that little girl like it was nothing. Sparrow shook her head.
That was different. Bullshit.
Why do I think the whole striking a commanding officer thing is the real cause of this? With a sigh, Sparrow let her head fall back against the wall. The impact of skull with plating produced a thud that echoed up and down the hall.
Because you think too damn much, that's why. His name was Lieutenant Eisner, and he was a real asshole. I got transferred to his unit during the middle of deployment. This was back during the border war with Shinzasi. Eisner was a shit officer. He kept getting his unit into trouble in the field, and for whatever reason, he seemed to have it out for me personally. Kept riding me no matter what I did.
She shrugged.
After one of our ops went tits up, I'd had enough. Eisner was using some bullshit excuse to chew out my gunner, and I went over and told him off. Lost my temper and ended up popping him in the face. Gave him a real doozy of a shiner. Thing is, I'd been posted to guard duty and I'd left my watch. So Eisner had me brought up on cowardice before the enemy.
Sparrow shrugged again.
7 years of service, down the drain, just like that. Only stuff I got to keep were my augments.
And she made a muscle with her arm before dropping it.
Shit, said Kira.
Couldn't you fight the charges?
Nah, it happened out in the field during combat operations. The League wasn't going to ship us back for an investigation. The footage showed me leaving my post and hitting Eisner. That was all that mattered.
So why don't you go in there and explain, said Kira, motioning toward the hold.
Wouldn't do any good, said Sparrow.
She stood.
Why should they believe me? Far as they're concerned, I'm hardly better than a deserter.
She slapped Kira on the shoulder.
Doesn't matter anyway. We don't need to like each other in order to do our jobs. Now, are you going to get out of my way or not?
Kira moved aside, and Sparrow limped past, leaving her alone in the corridor. After thinking for a long minute, Kira climbed up the center of the ship and made her way to control. Falcone was there, as she expected, and Nielsen, too, looking far better than she had the previous day. She and the first officer exchanged companionable nods, and then Kira went over to the captain and said, "Any news?"
Not at the moment.
Good. I have a favor to ask. He looked at her, wary.
Is that so?
Will you come with me to the planet? Falcone's eyebrows rose fractionally.
Why?
Across the room, Nielsen paused reading something on a display to listen. Because, said Kira, I don't want to be down there all alone with the UMC.
You don't trust them? Said Nielsen.
Kira hesitated a second. I trust you more.
Falcone let her hang for a few seconds, and then he said,
Well, today's your lucky day. I already arranged things with Akawe.
You're going? Said Kira, not quite believing.
Not just me. Trig, Nielsen, and the Entropus, too.
The first officer sniffed. Just what I wanted to do on a Sunday afternoon.
Falcone grinned at Kira.
There's no way I'm coming this far and not getting out to see the sights.
The knowledge eased Kira's concern somewhat.
So Sparrow, Huachong, and Vishal are going to stay on board?
Exactly. The UMC are bringing their own dock. Sparrow still isn't cleared for duty and Huachong doesn't fit in our exos. Besides, I want Huachong on the ship in case anything goes wrong.
That made sense, Kira said. Who's taking the exos then?
Falcone jerked his head toward Nielsen.
Her and Trig.
That's not necessary, said Nielsen. I'm perfectly capable of...
The captain didn't give her the opportunity to finish.
Yes, you are. But I'd rather have my crew in armor for this trip. Besides, I've never cared for exos. Too restrictive. Give me a plain old skin suit any day of the week.
6. The rest of the day passed in a mood of quiet intensity. The crew bustled around, preparing for the descent to the planet, while Kira reviewed the procedures for preventing contamination while in an unknown and potentially life-bearing alien environment. She knew them by heart, but it was always good to read them again before the start of an expedition. Ideally, they would have spent months, if not years, studying the planet's biosphere from a distance before daring to put an actual human on the surface. But given the circumstances, that was a luxury they couldn't afford. Still, Kira wanted to reduce the chances of contamination, in either direction, as much as possible. The planet was an incredible source of information. It would be a crime to infect it with a set of human microbes. Unfortunately, even the most thorough decontamination couldn't remove every foreign body from the surface of their equipment, but they'd do the best they could. After some thought, she drew up a list of recommendations, best practices for protecting the location and themselves, based off her professional experience. She sent the list to both Falcone and Akawe.
These are going to be a real pain in the ass, Navarez. Running through decon twice? No touching of an object without express permission. Walking single file. No CO2 venting. The UMCN already has its own set of protocols for dealing with this sort of situation, and they're more than adequate. Akawe.
No, they aren't. We've never found a location like this before. We can't screw this up. Future generations will thank us for it. Kira.
First, we have to make sure there are future generations. Akawe.
He continued to grumble, but after some more discussion, he agreed to implement her guidelines during the landing mission.
But that's all they are, Navarez. Guidelines. Shit happens in the field and you have to adapt. Akawe.
As long as we make an attempt to preserve the site, that's all I'm asking.
Kira.
Roger that.
Akawe.
Kira returned to examining the images Grigorovich and Horstcha Ubuto were collecting of Planet E, as well as the rest of the system. She didn't learn much, but she kept at it, hoping to spot something else that might help them find the Staff of Blue. Dinner, when it came, was a friendlier, more energetic affair than the previous one. Nielsen was there, and though everyone was somewhat on edge about the upcoming trip, a sense of optimism pervaded the air. It felt as if they, and humans in general, were finally going to be able to make significant progress against the jellies. Most of the conversations revolved around what they might or might not expect to run into on the planet, as well as the best pieces of equipment to take. Room on the UMC shuttle would be limited, so they had to choose wisely. Sparrow, as Kira expected, was disgruntled at being left behind on the wallfish. Huachong didn't seem to mind either way, to which Falcone said,
When I don't have to worry about you ripping your stomach back open, then you can climb into an exo, and not a moment sooner.
Sparrow conceded the point, but Kira could tell she was still unhappy. To distract her, Kira said, So I'm curious, is Sparrow your first or last name? You never said.
I haven't.
Sparrow took a sip of wine.
Imagine that.
Her name is just listed as Sparrow on her ID,
said Falcone, leaning toward Kira.
Really, said Kira. You only have one name?
A twinkle appeared in Sparrow's eyes.
Only one that I answer to.
I bet the Marines could tell me for sure, but Kira wasn't about to ask them.
What about you, then?
She said, looking at Trig. The kid groaned and buried his head in his hands.
Oh, man. You have to ask.
What? Around the room, the rest of the crew grinned. Vishal plopped his cup down on the table and pointed a finger at Trig.
Our young companion here has a most interesting name. Yes, he does.
Trig's just a nickname, said Sparrow. His real name is...
No,
the kid said, his cheeks reddening.
My aunt had a weird sense of humor, okay?
To Kira, Vishal said.
She must have. She named the poor child Epiphany Jones.
And everyone but Trig laughed.
That's a unique name,
Kira said.
Falcone said, It gets better. Tell her how we found Trig.
The kid shook his head as the rest of the crew tried to talk at once.
Come on! Not that story.
Ah, yes, said Sparrow, grinning. Why don't you tell me yourself?
Said Kira. The kid wrinkled his nose.
He was a dancer,
said Hua Chung, and nodded as if she'd shared a great secret. Kira gave Trig an appraising look.
A dancer, huh?
On Onset Station, around Signy B,
Vishal added. He was making a living performing in a bar for the miners.
It wasn't like that,
Trig protested. The others tried to break in, and he raised his voice to be heard over the clamor.
Not really honest! My friend worked at the place, and he was trying to find a way to attract business. So I came up with the idea. We put some Tesla coils on stage and used them to play music. Then I rigged up a skin suit to work as a Faraday cage, and I stood between the coils and caught the lightning bolts with my hands, arms, that sort of thing. It was awesome.
And don't forget the dancing, said Falcone, grinning.
Trig shrugged.
So I danced a bit.
I wasn't there myself, Nielsen said, putting a hand on Kira's arm. But I heard he was very enthusiastic. Despite his obvious embarrassment, Trig seemed somewhat proud of the first officer's praise, humorous though it was.
Oh, he was, said Vishal. He was.
Taking pity on the kid's discomfort, Kira changed the subject.
What kind of music did you play?
Mostly scram rock, thrash, that sort of thing.
So why'd you leave?
Didn't have any reason to stay,
he mumbled, and downed the rest of his water. A somber mood quelled the conversation. Then Falcone wiped his mouth with a napkin and said,
I know what you need.
What?
Said Trig, staring at his plate.
A religious experience.
The kid snorted. Then his lips curved with a faint, reluctant smile.
Yeah. Okay. You might be right.
Of course I'm right, said Falcone. With newfound enthusiasm, Trig scraped the rest of his food into his mouth, chewed and swallowed.
I'm gonna regret that,
he said, smiling as he got to his feet.
Don't hurt yourself, said Hua Chung.
Go on, eat the whole thing this time,
called Sparrow.
Video! Take video!
Said Falcone.
Just make sure you wash afterward.
Nielsen grimaced slightly.
Yes, ma'am.
Confused, Kira looked between them. A religious experience? Falcone picked up his plate and carried it to the sink.
Trig has an uncommon love of hot peppers. While back, he picked up a Black Nova off a wirehead on Eidolon.
I take it a Black Nova's a kind of pepper? Trig bounced on his heels.
Hottest one in the galaxy.
It's so hot, said Sparrow. They say you'll see the face of God if you're idiot enough to eat one. That or you pass out and die.
Hey now,
Trig protested.
It's not that bad.
Ha!
Have you tried it? Kira asked Falcone. He shook his head.
I prefer not to wreck my stomach.
She eyed Trig.
So why do you like it so much?
Well, if you don't have enough food, hot sauce really helps, you know? Cuts the hunger. That's what got me into peppers. That, and I kind of like the challenge. Gives me a sense of control. It doesn't even hurt after a while, and you just feel like, whee!
Trig rolled his head as if dizzy.
Helps with hunger, huh?
Kira was starting to understand.
Yeah.
Trigg took his dishes to the sink and then hurried out of the galley.
Wish me luck.
Kira took a sip of her chow.
Should we wait? She asked, looking at the others.
Falcone activated the holodisplay on his table.
If you want.
A while back, Trigg mentioned there were food shortages on Onset Station. A frown settled on Despero's sharp face.
That's what you want to call it. Royal fuck-up is more like it.
Oh?
Yeah. Way I understand it, the sublight transport that was supposed to resupply Onset from Cygni A broke down, went off course. No big deal, right? The station had a Hydra Bay plus plenty of extra food stockpiled. Only problem was...
Only problem was, said Falcone, looking over the gleaming hollow. The quartermaster had been cutting corners, pocketing the difference. Less than a third of the food was actually there, and most of it was rotten. Faulty seals or something. Kira winced.
Oh, shit.
You can say that again. By the time they realized how bad the situation was, the station was nearly out of food, and the replacement tug was still a few weeks out.
Weeks? Why so long? Cygni B isn't that far from A.
Bureaucracy. Time it took to gather the supplies, prep a ship, etc. Apparently they didn't have any FTL transport set up at the time, so they had to do it sublight. It was a whole collection of screw-ups.
Sparrow chimed in.
From what Trigg said, things got real bad on Onset before the new transport showed up. Supposedly, they ended up spacing the quartermaster and the station commander.
And she nodded as if sharing a great secret.
Fool.
Kira shook her head. How long ago was this? Sparrow looked over at Falcone.
What, about 10, 12 years?
He nodded. Sounds about right. Kira picked at her food, thinking. Trigg would have been pretty young then.
Yep.
No wonder he wanted to get off Onset. Falcone returned his attention to the hollow. Wasn't his only reason, but yes. 7.
They were still in the galley 40-some minutes later when Trigg strutted back in. His cheeks were bright red, his eyes swollen, bloodshot, glassy, and his skin shiny with sweat, but he looked happy, almost euphoric.
How'd it go, kid?
Sparrow asked, leaning back against the wall. He grinned and puffed up his chest.
Awesome. But sheesh, my throat burns.
I can't imagine why, Nielsen said in a dry tone. The kid started toward the kitchen area, and then stopped and looked at Kira.
Can you believe we're actually going to get to explore alien ruins tomorrow?
You looking forward to it?
He nodded, serious but still excited.
Oh yeah. But we'll... I was wondering, what happens if they're still around?
I'd like to know that, too, Nielsen murmured. In her mind's eye, Kira again saw the Highmost sweep the staff of blue downward, and a dark and miserable planet vanish from the sky. We hope they're in a good mood. 8. Trigg's final question lingered in Kira's mind as she returned to her cabin. What happens if they're still around? Would indeed. She checked on the ship's progress in her console. Course unchanged. Planet E now brighter than any of the visible stars. And then lay on the bed and closed her eyes. Tomorrow's worries would have to wait for tomorrow. She slept. And this time no memories intruded. 9. A persistent beeping roused her. Annoyed, Kira forced her eyes open. In the hollow, she saw the time displayed. 03:45, 15 minutes until departure. She groaned and rolled out of bed, feeling every second of missed sleep. Then it occurred to her that she'd forgotten to set an alarm. Was Grigorovich responsible for waking her? As she dressed, Kira opened a new window and sent a single line to the ship mind. Thanks, Kira. A second later, a response arrived.
Dinada, Grigorovich.
It paid to be courteous with ship minds, especially if they were anything less than sane. Still groggy, Kira ran through the ship and climbed toward the nose of the wallfish. The ship hadn't stopped thrusting, which meant the shuttle had yet to arrive. Good. She wasn't too late. She found the crew, along with the entropists and the four marines in power armor, at the top of the ship, by the airlock.
About time, said Falcone, and tossed her a blaster. He was wearing a skin suit, helmet included, and his oversized grenade launcher, Francesca, was slung across his back. Is the shuttle close? Kira asked. As if in response, the thrust alert sounded, and Grigorovich said,
Initiating docking maneuvers with the UMCS Ilmora. Please secure yourself to the nearest handhold, seatbelt, and or sticky pad.
Vishal saw her yawning and offered her a pill of AccuWake.
Here, Miss Kira, try this.
I don't think...
It may not help, but I think it's worth trying.
Still doubtful, Kira popped the capsule into her mouth. It burst between her teeth with a sharp wintergreen tang, strong enough to make her nose tingle and her eyes water. Within seconds, her exhaustion and mental haze began to dissipate, leaving her feeling as if she'd had a full night's sleep. Astonished, she looked back at the doctor.
It worked! How did it work?
A sly smile graced the doctor's face, and he tapped the side of his nose.
I had a suspicion it might. The medicine, it goes straight into the blood and then to your brain. Very quick, very difficult for the soft blade to stop without hurting your brain. And it is supposed to help, yes? So maybe the Xeno knows not to interfere.
Whatever the explanation, Kira was grateful for the chemical assistance. She couldn't afford to be sleep-deprived right then.
Then all sense of weight abandoned her, and bile filled her throat.
Docking was swift and efficient. The UMC shuttle approached the wallfish head-on, so both ships were safe from radiation within the cones of their shadow shields. They made contact, nose to nose, and a light shudder passed through the wallfish at the touch. The joined airlocks rolled open. A Marine poked his head through on the other side.
Welcome aboard, he said.
Falcone gave Kira a crooked smile.
Time to go poking around where we don't belong.
Let's do this, she said, and jumped into the Ilmora. Chapter 2. A Kylo Usque ad Centrum. 1. Kira watched on her overlays as the wallfish and the Darmstadt receded into the distance, two bright points of light that quickly dwindled to near nothing. The ships moved as a locked pair, on course for the asteroid they'd chosen to mine. Behind them, Bug Hunt was a dull, ruddy orb, a dying coal set within a field of black. Kira sat buckled into a jump seat along the wall, next to Falcone. The rest of the expedition was likewise secured, except for those like Trigg and Nielsen who were wearing power armor. They stood locked into hard points near the back of the shuttle. Their group numbered 21. 14 of them, including Hawes and the three other Marines from the Wallfish, were in exos. Two of the UMC exos looked to be heavy armor variants, walking tanks with portable turrets attached to the fronts of their breastplates. Most of the Marines were enlisted men, although Akawe had also sent along his second-in-command, Koyich, to oversee the operation. The yellow-eyed man was in the middle of saying to Falcone,
We say you jump, clear?
Perfectly, said Falcone. He didn't look happy, though. Koyich's upper lip curled.
I don't know why the captain agreed to let rim-runners like you along. But orders are orders. If shit goes down, stay the hell out of our way, you hear? You cross a line of fire, we're gonna shoot through you, not around you, get it?
If anything, Falcone's expression became even more glacial.
Oh, I got it.
In her mind, Kira checked the box labeled asshole next to Koyich's name. Overhead, the light strip switched from the clean white shine of full-spectrum illumination to the purple glow of irradiating UV, and from jets mounted along the walls, gusts of decon gases buffeted her and the other passengers. The Ilmora was laid out differently than the Valkyrie, but it was similar enough that Kira felt a strong sense of déjà vu. She tried to put aside the emotion and focus on the present. Whatever happened on the planet, they weren't going to get stuck in the shuttle, not with the Darmstadt and the Wallfish nearby. Even so, it was unsettling to be in such a small ship, so far from any human-settled system. They were truly explorers of the deep unknown. They had enough food to stay on the planet for a week. If more was needed, the Darmstadt could drop it from orbit once the ship got back from the asteroid belt. Barring unforeseen complications, they would stay on the planet until they found the Staff of Blue,
or were able to determine it wasn't there. Returning to the ships was going to be a huge hassle, not only because of the propellant needed to lift the shuttle into orbit, but also because of the decontamination they would need to go through before being allowed back on board. Like everyone not clad in an exo, Kira had donned a skin suit and helmet, which she'd be living in until they left the planet. Everyone but the entropists, who had somehow transformed the smart fabric of their gradient robes into fitted suits complete with helmets and visors. As always, their technology impressed. The suits would have been necessary regardless of concerns over biocontainment. Spectrographic analysis had shown that the surface atmosphere on the ground would kill them without protection, not immediately, but fast enough. The Wallfish and the Darmstadt had decelerated a considerable amount as they neared the planet, but neither ship had come to a complete relative stop, which left the Elmora with several hours of thrusting before it could enter orbit. Kira closed her eyes and waited. 2. The shriek of alarms yanked Kira back to full alertness. Red lights flashed overhead, and the Marines shouted at each other, barking incomprehensible jargon. "What's going on?" she said. No one replied, but Kira saw the answer for herself as she pulled up her overlays. Ships. Lots of ships popping out of FTL. Jellies. A jolt of adrenaline caused Kira's heart to race, and the soft blade roiled underneath her skin suit. She scanned the details. 4, 5, 6 ships had appeared so far. They'd entered normal space somewhat offset from the heart of the system. An error in their navigation systems, perhaps. But knowing the speed of the jelly's drives, they couldn't be more than a few hours away at max thrust. 7 ships. Next to her, Falcone was speaking frantically into the microphone of his helmet. Across the middle of the shuttle, Koyich was doing the same.
"Shit," said Sanchez. "Guess the jellies were already out here, searching for the Staff of Blue."
A clank as Tatupoa slapped the side of Sanchez's armored head.
"No, dumbass. They went and flash-traced us is what they did. Timing is all wrong elsewise."
Corporal Nishu chimed in.
"First time we've seen them do it, too. Fuckers."
Then Lieutenant Hawes.
"Somehow they figured out how to track us even with all the course adjustments."
He shook his head.
"Not good."
"What course adjustments?" Kira asked. Nishu was the one to answer.
"Whenever we drop out of FTL to bleed off heat, we make a slight course change. No more than a degree or a fraction of a degree, but it's enough to throw off anyone who's trying to plot your final destination based off your trajectory. Isn't always helpful in the League with the stars so close together, but makes a difference if you're going from, say, Cygni to Eidolon."
Koyich and Falcone were still talking into their microphones. "And the Wallfish made those corrections too?" Kira said. Hawes nodded.
"Horstia coordinated it with your ship mind. Should have kept the jellies from flash tracing us, but guess not."
Flash trace. Kira remembered the term from 7 Minutes to Saturn, the war movie Alan had loved so much. The concept was pretty simple. If you wanted to see what had happened at a location prior to the time of your arrival, all you had to do was go FTL and fly away from that location until you'd traveled a distance greater than the light from the event. Then you just parked your ship in open space, turned on your telescope, and waited. The detail of the images received would be limited by the size of your onboard equipment, but even at interstellar distances, it would be relatively easy to spot something like, say, the Wallfish and the Darmstadt jumping to FTL. Ship drives were hot torches against the cold backdrop of space, and they were dead easy to find and track. Kira berated herself for not considering the possibility sooner. Of course the jellies would do their best to figure out where the soft blade had gone after 61 Cygni. Why wouldn't they? She knew how important the Xeno was to them. Somehow, with the appearance of the nightmares, she'd assumed the jellies would have bigger things to worry about. Apparently not. Falcone shouted something in his helmet that Kira only heard a muted version of because his speaker was turned off. Then he let his head fall back against the wall, a grim expression on his face. She knocked on his visor, and he looked at her.
"What is it?"
she said. He scowled.
"We're too far away for the Wallfish to reach us before the jellies. Even if she could, her tanks are over half empty, and there's no way we can—"
He stopped, lips pursed, and glanced toward Trig.
"The odds aren't good, put it that way."
We keep going, said Koyich,
loud enough to be heard throughout the shuttle.
Our only chance now is to find this staff before the jellies do.
He turned his slitted cat eyes onto Kira.
If we do, you better be able to use it, Nevarez.
Kira gave a sharp jerk of her chin, and even though she was far from certain, she said,
Get the staff into my hands, we'll have a real surprise for the jellies.
Koyich seemed satisfied by her statement, but a message popped up in her overlays.
You sure about that?
Falcone. The Xeno seems to know how to use it, so let's hope. Kira. Then the thrust alert rang out, and a lead blanket settled over Kira as the Elmora kicked up its burn to a full 2 Gs.
ETA to Nidus, 14 minutes, said the shuttle's pseudo-intelligence.
Nidus? Nielsen asked before Kira could. Lieutenant Hawes answered.
That's our unofficial designation for the planet. Easier to remember than some random letter.
Kira thought it was fitting. Closing her eyes, she switched her overlays to the shuttle's outside cameras. The curve of the planet rose up before them, one half in shadow, the other in light, and the Terminator, a dusky twilight realm dividing the two from pole to pole. Bands of swirling clouds enveloped the middle of the orb, massive storms driven by the transferred heat from the sunlocked side. Nidus. Vertigo made Kira grab the arms of the jump seat as, for a moment, she felt as if they were hanging over an enormous precipice, about to fall. It wasn't needed, but the pseudo-intelligence provided continual updates, perhaps because it was calming, perhaps because of UMC protocol. Resumption of weightlessness in 5, 4, 3, 2.
The lead blanket vanished, and Kira swallowed as her stomach attempted to escape through her mouth.
Z-axis swap commencing. She felt a shove against the right side of her body, and Nidus swung out of view, replaced by the spangled depths of space as the Elmora turned end for end, and then another shove as the spin stopped. She turned off the overlays and concentrated on controlling her rebellious stomach. Retracting radiators, T-minus 1 minute 15 seconds until atmospheric entry. The time crawled by with agonizing slowness. Then, contact in 10, 9, 8. As the pseudo-intelligence continued its countdown, Kira checked on the jellies. 4 of the ships had changed course in pursuit of the shuttle. The other 3 were heading toward the asteroid belt, presumably to refill their tanks, same as the Darmstadt and the Wallfish. So far, none of the aliens seemed to show any interest in attacking either of the 2 ships. But Kira knew that would change. Contact. A tremor ran through the Elmora, and Kira drifted back against her seat as the tremors increased into a shuddering roar. She took a quick look outside via the rear-facing cameras. A wall of flame greeted her. She shivered and switched off the feed.
Initiating braking, said the pseudo-intelligence.
A full-body hammer blow slammed Kira into the seat. She gritted her teeth, grateful for the support of the soft blade. The shaking worsened, and the Elmora bucked hard enough to make Kira's head snap back and her teeth clatter together. Several of the Marines whooped.
Oh, mama, riding the dragon! Kick it, man! Just like orbital skydiving back home! Now that's what a hot drop is supposed to feel like!
Part of Kira couldn't help but think that Sparrow would have enjoyed the turbulence. The sound of the engines changed, growing deeper, more muted, and the vibrations quickened in frequency.
Switching fusion drive to closed cycle operation, said the pseudo-intelligence. That meant they were about 90 clicks above the ground. Below that height, the density of the atmosphere would cause enough thermal backscattering from an open cycle reactor to melt the back of the shuttle. Not only that, an unshielded exhaust would irradiate everything near the landing zone. The problem with closed cycle operation, however, was that the reactor devoured hydrogen at close to 10 times the normal rate. And right then, Kira worried that they would need every ounce of propellant to escape the jellies. Unless, that was, she could get her hands on the staff of blue. The bulkheads around them groaned and squealed, and somewhere a piece of equipment clattered onto the floor. Kira checked the cameras. A layer of clouds obscured the view, and then they cleared,
and she spotted the small fold of weathered mountains they were heading for. The vanished complex was just barely visible as a gleam of white lines hidden deep within the shadowed valley. The Omora bucked again, even harder than before. Pain shot through Kira's tongue, and blood flooded her mouth as she realized she'd bitten herself. She coughed as the blood went down the wrong way.
"What was that?"
she shouted.
"Drag shoots,"
replied Koyich in an infuriatingly calm voice. She would have sworn he was enjoying this.
"Help save fuel,"
Sanchez added. Kira nearly laughed at the absurdity of it. The roar of the wind outside softened, and the pressure on her chest lessened. She took a breath. Not much longer now. RCS thrusters sounded, short bursts above and below them along the hull. The ship wobbled and seemed to turn slightly around Kira. Stability adjustments, repositioning the Ilmora for landing. She counted seconds to herself. Almost half a minute passed, and then a sudden burn jammed her deep into the chair, making it difficult to breathe. The Ilmora juddered and swayed. Kira's weight normalized, and from the back of the ship came a pair of booming thuds. Then the engines cut out, and a shocking stillness followed. Planetfall. Chapter 3. Shards. 1.
"We made it," said Kira. After so long spent traveling, arrival hardly seemed real.
Falcone popped his buckles.
"Time to say hi to the natives."
"Not quite yet," said Koyich. He stood. "Eyes and ears, you ugly apes. Exos free to disengage. Grab your battle rattle and get me a sit-rep yesterday. And keep those drones out of the air until I give the order. You heard me, go!"
Around them, the shuttle transformed into a bustle of activity as the Marines readied themselves to deploy. Before popping the airlock, they checked the atmosphere for unknown risk factors and then scanned the surrounding area for signs of movement.
"Anything?"
Koyich demanded. One of the Marines from the Darmstadt shook his head.
"No, sir. Check thermals."
"Already did, sir. It's dead out there."
"All right, move out. Exos take point."
Kira found herself crowded between the two entropists as the Marines assembled before the airlock.
Vera said, "Isn't this most exciting?"
Joris concluded. Kira tightened the grip on her blaster.
"I'm not sure that's the word I'd choose."
She wasn't even sure what she was feeling. A potent combination of dread and anticipation and... it didn't bear thinking about. She'd save her emotions for later. Right now, there was a job that needed doing. She glanced over at Trig. The kid's face was pale behind his visor, but he still looked stupidly eager to see where they'd landed.
"How you doing?"
she asked. He nodded, keeping his eyes fixed on the airlock.
"All green."
The airlock broke with a loud hiss, and a crown of condensation swirled around the edges of the door as it rolled back. The dull red light of Bug Hunt streamed in, casting an elongated oval on the corrugated decking. The lonely howl of an abandoned wind became audible. Koyich signaled with his hand, and four of the armored Marines scrambled through the airlock. After a few moments, one of them said,
"Clear!"
Kira had to wait until the remaining Marines exited the shuttle before they signaled for her and the entropists to follow. Outside, the world was split in half. To the east, the rust-colored sky held an evening glow, and Bug Hunt protruded above the tortured horizon, a swollen red orb, far dimmer than Epsilon Indi, the sun Kira had grown up with. To the west lay a realm of perpetual darkness, shrouded with starless night. Thick clouds hung low over the land, red and orange and purple, and knotted with vortices driven by the ceaseless wind. Lightning illuminated the folded depths of the clouds, and the rumble of distant thunder echoed across the land. The Ilmora had landed on what looked like a patch of cracked paving stones. Kira's mind automatically categorized them as artificial, but she cautioned herself against making assumptions. Surrounding the landing zone were open fields covered with what looked like black moss. The fields ascended into foothills, and the foothills into the bounding mountains. The snow-mantled peaks were rounded with age and wear,
but their dark silhouettes possessed a solid bulk that still managed to be intimidating. Like on the fields and the foothills, glossy black vegetation grew up the sides of the mountains, black so as to better absorb the red light from their parent star. The buildings she had identified from space weren't visible at the moment. They lay farther up the valley, behind a flank of the neighboring mountain, perhaps 2 or 3 clicks away. She always found it hard to judge distances on new planets, the thickness of the atmosphere, the curve of the horizon, and the relative size of nearby objects were all things that took some time getting used to.
"Dramatic," said Falcone, coming up beside her.
"It looks like a painting," said Nielsen, joining them.
"Or something out of a game," said Trigg.
To Kira, the place felt old beyond reckoning. It seemed unlikely it had been the homeworld of the vanished. For a sentient, technologically advanced species to evolve on a tidally locked planet would be extremely difficult. But she had little doubt the vanished had settled there long ago and had stayed for a long time thereafter. The Marines rushed about, setting up auto turrets around the shuttle, tossing drones into the air, which zoomed skyward with a nerve-scraping buzz, and posting sensors, active and passive, in a wide perimeter.
"Form up,"
Koyich barked, and the Marines assembled in front of the now-closed airlock. Then he trotted over to where Kira stood watching with Falcone and the entropists, and said,
"We got 2 hours before the jellies make orbit."
Kira's heart dropped.
"That's not enough time."
"It's all the time we've got. It's all the time we've got," said Koyich. "They're not going to risk hitting us with bombs or missiles or rods from God, so..."
"Sorry, what?"
Falcone answered. "Kinetic projectiles. Big heavy lumps of tungsten or something like that. They hit almost as hard as nukes." Koyich jerked his chin.
"That. The jellies aren't going to risk destroying you or the staff. They're going to have to come down here in person. If we can get into the buildings you spotted, we can fight a delaying action. Buy you some time. Hold out long enough and the Darmstadt might be able to give us some reinforcements. This ain't going to be a fight one in space, that's for damn sure."
"Guess we can forget about proper containment procedures," said Kira. Koyich grunted.
"You could say that."
The first officer barked a few commands, and within moments, their group set out marching at double speed across the broken stones, each step of the 14 sets of power armor thudding like dire drums. 2 of the Marines from the Darmstadt stayed behind with the shuttle. When Kira looked back, she saw them moving around the vessel, checking its heat shield for damage. The wind provided a constant pressure against Kira's side. After so long spent on ships and stations, the movement of air seemed strange, that and the unevenness of the ground. She did the math in her head. It had been close to 6 months since she had last stood on Adrastea. 6 months of closed rooms, artificial lights, and the stink of close-pressed bodies. Patches of black moss crunched under the soles of her boots. The moss wasn't the only vegetation nearby. There were clusters of fleshy vines, assuming they were plants, growing upon nearby rock formations. The vines tumbled like locks of greasy hair across the face of the stone. Kira couldn't help but note different features. Leaf-like structures with veins that formed reticulated venation, similar to earth dicots. Staggered branching with deep ridges on the stems. No visible flowers or fruiting bodies. Looking was one thing, but what she really wanted was to get a sample of the plant's cells and start digging into its biochemistry. That was where the real magic was. An entirely new biome to explore, and she didn't dare stop to learn anything about it. They rounded the flank of the mountain, and by unspoken consent, the 19 of them stopped. Before them, in the low hollow of land at the head of the valley, lay the complex of alien buildings. The settlement was several clicks across, bigger even than Highstone, the capital of Wayland. Not that Highstone was particularly big by League standards. There had only been 84,000 people living there the year Kira had left. Tall, spindly towers stretched skyward, white as bone, and laced with a caul of the invading moss that had insinuated itself into every crack and flaw in the structures. Through broken walls, rooms of every size were visible, now drifted with dirt and obscured by opportunistic vines. An assortment of smaller buildings huddled in the spaces between the towers, all with tapered roofs and lancet windows empty of glass or other covering. There were few straight lines. Naturalistic arcs dominated the design aesthetic. Even in their half-ruined state, there was an attenuated elegance to the buildings that Kira had only seen in art or videos of pre-planned luxury communities on Earth. Everything about the complex felt intentional. From the curve of the walls to the layout of the paths that wound like streams throughout the settlement. The place was undeniably abandoned. And yet, in the light of the endless sunset, beneath the shelf of burning clouds, it felt as if the city wasn't dead. Just dormant. As if it were waiting for a signal to spring back to life and restore itself to the heights of its former glory. Kira breathed out. Awe left her without words.
Thule,
said Falcone, breaking the spell. He seemed as affected as she was.
Where to?
Said Koyich. It took Kira a moment to clear her mind well enough to answer.
I don't know. Nothing jumps out at me. I need to get closer. Forward march,
Koyich barked, and they continued down the slope toward the city. Next to Kira, the entropist said,
We are indeed blessed to see this, prisoner.
She felt inclined to agree. 2. The towers loomed ever higher as they approached the edge of the settlement. White was the predominant color among the buildings, but irregular panels of blue provided contrast to the structures, enhancing with a shot of vivid decoration in otherwise barren cityscape.
They had a sense of beauty, said Nielsen.
We don't know that, said Falcone. Everything could be for some practical purpose.
Does it really look like that to you? The captain didn't answer. As they entered the city via a wide avenue from the south, an intense feeling of familiarity swept over Kira. It left her feeling displaced, as if she'd shifted through time. She had never been to that twilight city before, but the soft blade had, and its memories were nearly as strong as her own. She remembered
life, moving things, flying and walking, and machines that did the same. The touch of skin, the sound of voices, the sweet scent of flowers carried on the wind.
And for a moment, she could nearly see the city as it had been, vital, vibrant, standing tall with hope and pride. Don't lose control, she told herself. Don't lose control. And she hardened her mental grip on the soft blade. Whatever happened that day, she was determined not to let the Xeno slip her grasp and run rampant. Not after her previous mistakes.
When do you think this was built?
Said Trigg. He gaped through his visor with undisguised wonder.
Centuries ago, said Kira, recalling the sense of age from the soft blade's memories. Before we ever left Earth. Maybe even earlier.
Koyich glanced over his shoulder at her. Still no idea where to look?
She hesitated.
Not yet. Let's head to the center.
With two of the Marines in power armor taking the lead, they continued deeper into the maze of buildings. Overhead, the wind whirling between the tapered towers sounded as if it were trying to whisper secrets. But listen though she did, Kira could make no sense of the words in the air. She kept scanning the buildings and streets, looking for anything that might spark a specific memory. The spaces between the structures were narrower than humans preferred. The proportions were taller, thinner, which matched the images she had seen of the vanished. Rubble blocked the avenue in front of them, forcing them to detour around. Vera and Joris stopped and bent to pick up a piece that had fallen from one of the nearby towers.
It does not look like stone, said Vera.
Nor metal, said Joris. The material...
Doesn't matter now, said Koyich. Keep moving!
Their footsteps echoed off the sides of the buildings, loud and disconcerting in the empty spaces.
Sneaked!
Kira spun toward the noise, as did the rest of the squad. There, by an empty doorway, a rectangular panel flickered with artificial light. It was a screen of some sort, blue-white and distorted with cracks. No text or pictures appeared, just the pale field of light.
How can there still be power?
Said Nielsen in an overly calm voice.
Maybe we're not the first ones to visit,
said Trig. Kira started toward the screen, and Koyich put up an arm to bar her way.
Hold up. We don't know if it's safe.
I'll be fine, she said, and walked past him. Up close, the glowing panel produced a faint hum. Kira put a hand on it. The screen didn't change.
Hello?
She said, feeling slightly foolish. Again, nothing happened. The wall next to the panel was covered with grime. She wiped some of it away, wondering if there was anything beneath. There was. A sigil lay there, set within the surface of the material, and the sight of it froze her in place. The emblem was a line of fractal shapes, coiled close, one upon another. Kira couldn't decipher any meaning, but she recognized the language as belonging to the same all-important pattern that guided the Softblade's existence. Unable to take her eyes off the sigil, she backed away.
What is it?
Falcone asked.
I think the Vanished made the Great Beacon, she said.
Koyich readjusted the sling on his gun.
What makes you think that?
She pointed. Fractals. They were obsessed with fractals.
That doesn't help us now, said Koyich. Not unless you can read them.
No.
Then don't waste—
Koyich stiffened, as did Falcone. Alarmed, Kira checked her overlays. There, on the other side of Bug Hunt, another 4 jelly ships had just emerged out of FTL. They were coming in hot, a lot hotter than the first batch of enemy vessels.
God damn it,
said Falcone between clenched teeth.
How many ships did they send?
Look, the rest of the jellies are increasing their thrust so they'll arrive at the same time, said Koyich. He'd gone preternaturally calm, flipping the switch from serious to combat mode. Kira recognized the change in Falcone also.
We've got an hour to find this staff, maybe less. Pick it up, everyone. Double time.
With the Exos still at the lead, they trotted deeper into the city, until they arrived at an open plaza with a tall standing stone, cracked and weathered, in the center. As Kira examined the stone, she experienced a shock similar to when she'd seen the sigil, for it was covered with a fractal pattern, and when she looked at it closely, the smallest details of the pattern seemed to swim, as if moving of their own volition. She felt as if the ground had shifted. What was happening to her? Tingles crawled across the surface of her skin, and the soft blade stirred as if restless.
Anything? Said Koyich.
I don't recognize anything. Not specifically.
Right, we can't wait. Hawes, set up a search pattern. Look for anything that might resemble a staff. Use the drones, use everything we've got. If you haven't found the staff by the time the jellies enter orbit, then we focus on digging in and denying them territory. Yes, sir.
The lieutenant and Corporal Nishu split the rest of the Marines into 4 squads, and then they dispersed into the buildings. All of them save Koyich, who took up a position by the side of the plaza and, from the pack he was carrying, removed a comms dish that he aimed at the sky.
Nevarez,
he said, fiddling with the controls.
I'm hooking you up to the squad's feed. See if you recognize anything.
Kira nodded and sat hunched on the ground next to the standing stone. A contact appeared on her overlays. She accepted, and a grid of windows filled her vision. Each window displayed the video from a Marine or a drone. It was confusing to watch, but she did her best, shifting her attention from one window to the next as the Marines hurried through the decaying buildings, rushing through one empty room after another. And still, she felt no sense of certainty. They were in the right place, of that she was sure. But where in the complex they were supposed to go continued to elude her.
Tell me,
she commanded the soft blade, desperate. No answer was forthcoming, and with each passing moment, Kira was aware of the jellies growing closer. Falcone paced around the perimeter of the plaza, along with Trig and Nielsen, keeping watch. By one side, the Entropus stood huddled next to a panel that had come loose from the corner of a building, studying whatever lay underneath.
Nevarez,
said Koyich after a while. She shook her head.
Still nothing.
He grunted.
Hawes, start scouting for a location we can hole up in.
Yes, sir,
the sergeant replied over the radio. After half an hour of near silence, Falcone came over to Kira and squatted next to her while resting Francesca across his knees.
We're almost out of time, he said quietly.
I know, she said, eyes darting from one window to the next.
Can I help?
She shook her head.
What are we missing?
No idea, she said. Maybe it's been too long since the soft blade was here. A lot could have changed. I'm afraid I brought us all here to die.
He scratched his chin and was quiet for a few seconds.
I don't believe that. This has to be the place. We're just not looking at it right. The soft blade doesn't want to die or get captured by the jellies, does it?
No, she said slowly.
Okay. So why show you this system, this city? There has to be something the blade expects you to find. Something so obvious we're missing it.
Kira glanced at the standing stone. We're not looking at it right.
Can you give me control of a drone? She said, calling over to Koyich.
Just don't crash it, said the first officer. We're gonna need everyone we've got.
Kira linked the drone to her overlays and then closed her eyes so she could better concentrate on the feed from the machine. It was hovering next to a tower half a click away.
What are you thinking? Said Falcone. She could feel his presence next to her.
Fractals, she said.
Meaning?
She didn't answer, but zoomed the drone straight into the air, higher and higher, until it was flying above the top of even the tallest tower. Then she looked at the settlement as a whole, really looked, trying to see not only the individual buildings, but also the larger, overall shapes. A flicker of recognition came from the soft blade, but nothing more. She turned the drone in a slow circle, angling it up and down to make sure she wasn't missing anything. From the air, the towers were stark and beautiful, but she didn't allow herself to linger over the sight, dramatic though it was. A crack echoed through the city from the west. Kira's eyelids flew open, and as she looked for the source of the sound, the image of the city slipped out of focus. Her perception shifted, and she saw what she'd been searching for. The decay of the buildings and the encroachment of the native flora had hidden it until that very moment. But she saw. The ancient outline of the city was, as she had suspected, a fractal, and the shape of it contained meaning. There, at the nexus of the pattern, where it coiled in on itself like a nautilus shell. There, at the center of it all. The structure that she identified was on the far side of the settlement, a low, dome-shaped place that, had it been on Earth, she would have thought was a temple from some long-dead civilization. But temple felt like the wrong word. If anything, mausoleum seemed more appropriate, given the pale starkness of the building. The sight of it triggered no memory or sense of confirmation from the soft blade, no more so than the city as a whole. That the building was important seemed undeniable, knowing the affinity the vanished had for fractals. But whether or not it had anything to do with the staff, Kira couldn't say. Dismayed, she realized she was going to have to guess. They didn't have time to wait for the Xeno to disgorge another fragment of useful information. They had to act, and they had to act now. If she chose wrong, they'd die. But hesitation would kill them just as surely.
Hawes, was that you? Said Koyich.
Yes, sir. We located the entrance to an underground structure. Looks like it's defensible.
Kira tagged the building on the drone's feed and then quit the program.
We might not need it, she said, standing. I think I found something.
3.
You think, but you're not sure, said Koyich.
That's right.
That's some seriously weak shit, Navarez. You can't give us a better idea than you think.
Sorry, no.
Fuck.
Falcone said, doesn't look like we can get there before the jellies land. Kira checked the position of the aliens. The first 3 ships were just entering orbit. Even as she watched, she saw them dipping lower as they entered the atmosphere.
We have to try.
Damn it, said Koyich.
Worst case scenario, we'll hole up in that building, try to fight off the jellies. They don't know where we're headed, so that gives us an advantage. Pause. Get 2 exos over to the location Navarez marked. Full speed. Everyone else, form up on me, fast as you can. AOP is about to go hot.
Yes, sir!
The first officer collapsed the comms dish and stowed it in his pack, as they ran out of the plaza and down the nearest curving street. "Can the Ilmora give us any cover?" Kira asked. Tatupoa and another marine jogged out of a side street, joining them.
"The jellies would just shoot it down," said Koyich.
The buzzing of drones grew louder as several of the machines took up positions high overhead, providing constant overwatch. The wind tugged at them, causing the drones to dip and sway as they fought to hold still.
"The wallfish is on her way back," Falcone announced. "Emergency burn. She'll be here before long." "Better tell them not to," said Koyich. "That barge of yours doesn't stand a chance against the jellies."
Falcone didn't answer, but Kira could tell he disagreed.
"What are you planning, Kira?"
"A couple of cassava howitzers in the right place could take out at least half the jellies," Falcone.
"Can the wallfish get close enough?"
Kira. "Let Sparrow and Grigorovich worry about that," Falcone. Thudding along next to her in his power armor, Trigg looked nearly as worried as Kira felt.
"Just stick close to me and you'll be fine," she said.
He flashed her a sickly grin.
"Okay, just don't stab me with your suit." "Not a chance."
A pair of booms shook the air, and two jelly ships pierced the cover of clouds and descended through the sunset sky on pillars of blinding blue flame. The vessels disappeared behind the towers near the eastern edge of the settlement, and then the roar of the rockets fell silent.
"Move!"
Koyich barked, although none of them needed urging. They were already running fast as they could. Hawes, Nishu, and the rest of the search teams rejoined them and took up formation alongside Kira and the others. The radio crackled in Kira's ear. One of the two Marines who had gone ahead said,
"Sir, made it to the target. It's locked up tighter than the bank vault. No obvious entrance." "Cut your way in if you can," said Koyich between short breaths. "Whatever you do, defend that position at all costs." "Roger that."
For a moment, Kira worried about the Marines damaging the staff. Then she shook off the worry. If they couldn't get into the building, the point would be moot regardless. To her left, Sanchez said,
"Movement! 400 meters in closing!"
"Damn, they're fast," said Nielsen. She racked the slide on her snub-nosed rifle. Kira activated the targeting program on her blaster. A bright red crosshair appeared in the center of her vision. Then Sanchez swore in a language Kira didn't recognize and her overlays failed to translate.
"They just took out my drone," he said. "Mine too," said another Marine. "Shit, shit, shit, shit," said Hawes. "Make that three." "We have to get off the street," said Falcone. "We're sitting ducks out in the open."
Koyich shook his head.
"No, we keep pushing forward. If we stop, they catch us." 250 meters in closing," said Sanchez.
They could hear noises among the buildings now, thumping and clattering in the whine and buzz of drones. Kira reassessed her mental hold over the soft blade. "Only what I want," she thought, doing her best to impress the notion on the Xeno. No matter how chaotic things became, no matter how much pain or fear she might end up in, she wasn't going to let the soft blade inadvertently hurt someone again. Never that. Then she willed the Xeno to cover her face. Even though she was wearing the skin suit helmet, she wanted the additional protection. Her vision went black for the length of a blink, and then she could see the same as before, only now with the addition of the hazy, violet bands of the local EM fields. Thick loops emanated from the walls of several nearby buildings, marking places where the power was still on. Why hadn't she looked before?
"This is suicide," said Falcone.
He grabbed Kira by the arm and pulled her toward an open doorway in the nearest building.
"This way." "Stop," shouted Koyich. "That's an order." "Bullshit. I'm not under your command," said Falcone.
Nielsen followed him, and also Trigg and the Entropists. After a moment, Koyich had no choice but to order the Marines to do the same. The ground level of the building was tall and lofty. Soaring pillars divided the space at regular intervals, a forest of stone trunks that branched as they approached the ceiling. The sight reminded Kira, with almost physical force, of her dreams.
Koyich stormed over to Falcone. "You pull a stunt like that again and I'll have them pick you up and carry you."
He jerked the barrel of his blaster toward the Marines in power armor.
"That's—"
Falcone stopped as the noises outside grew louder. Kira saw movement in the street they'd just abandoned. The first jelly crawled into view, a tentacled squid, similar in forms to the ones Kira had encountered before. Following it were several more squids, a lobster-like creature, a chomper, and several more forms she'd only seen on the news. White, orb-shaped drones darted about over them, and farther back she spotted some kind of segmented vehicle flowing across the rubble-strewn street. At almost the same time, the jellies and the marines released clouds of chalk and chaff, hiding each other from view.
Go, go, go!
Hawes shouted. Laser blasts and gunfire erupted, and a chunk of masonry exploded out of the pillar above Kira's head. She ducked and ran, staying close to Trigg's exo. Explosions sounded behind them. Falcone turned and fired his grenade launcher, but Kira didn't look back. Their only hope now was speed. The two marines in the lead lowered their metal-clad shoulders and smashed straight through the wall in front of them. Another empty room, followed by another wall, and then they burst onto a narrow street.
Keep going!
Nielsen shouted. Kira looked for the entropists and saw them dimly through the swirling chalk, ghost-like figures nearly doubled over, hands outstretched.
This way!
She called, hoping it would help guide them. Together, she and the rest of the group sprinted across the street and into another building. This one was smaller, with tall, thin corridors barely wide enough for the exos. With every step, the machine scraped flakes off the mossy walls, showering the floor. The Marines continued to bull forward, breaking past every barrier. Future archaeologists, Kira reflected, weren't going to be happy with all the damage. They passed through a room with shallow, pool-shaped depressions in the floor. Kira remembered the scent of perfumes and the sound of splashing water. Then an arcade with large, broken tubes of some transparent material extending upward along the walls. Bodies rising through space, both pairs of arms outstretched for balance. And then they broke through onto another street, wider than the first. The buzzing of drones grew louder, and Kira saw thread-like flashes of superheated air as lasers punched through the clouds of chalk surrounding them. Then one of the lobster-like jellies skittered around the side of the building high above, clinging to the wall like an oversized insect, and jumped onto the back of Tatupoa's armor. The man shouted and twisted, flailing his arms in a futile attempt to knock loose the chittering creature.
Hold still!
Shouted Hawes, and a burst of gunfire erupted from his rifle. Each shot produced a pulse of pressure that Kira felt against the front of her chest. Ichor exploded from the side of the lobster, and it fell, twitching, to the cracked pavement. But it had accomplished its mission. The delay it caused was just enough for three squids to swarm around the building and close with them. The Marines weren't caught by surprise. The instant the squids entered their line of sight, the big chain guns mounted on the front of the two heavy exos sprang to life. Even through her helmet, and even through the soft blade's mask, the sound was painful and terrifying, visceral in its intensity. Kira continued to stumble forward, feeling as if her bones were being hammered. The three squids thrashed under the impacts of the Marines' explosive bullets. Several of their tentacles returned fire with blasters and guns and a whirling blade of death that buried itself in a wall down the street. One of the Marines threw a grenade. Falcone fired his launcher, and the paired set of blasts obscured the squids. Chunks of twitching flesh splattered the buildings and rained down around Kira. She ducked, shielding her face with an arm. Then they were inside again, and half the Marines turned to cover the rear. They spread to either side, using corners and rubble and what looked like high-backed benches for protection. Three of the men were bleeding, Tetupoa in his exo, the two others in skin suits. It looked like they'd all been hit by lasers. They didn't stop to tend their wounds. Without lowering his blaster, one of the two pulled out a canister of metafoam, sprayed his wound, and tossed the can to his comrade, who sprayed his own injury. Neither of them lost a step throughout the whole process.
Go, go, out the back,
shouted Koyich, continuing to retreat from the building entrance.
How much farther?
Said Nielsen.
100 meters,
shouted Hawes.
Boom!
The walls and ceilings vibrated like a drumhead, and centuries' worth of accumulated dust plumed into the air as the corner of the building caved inward. The ceiling sagged, and everywhere Kira heard creaks and squeals and tearing moans. She willed the soft blade to switch to infrared. Through the new opening in the side of the room, she saw the jelly vehicle directly outside, black and menacing, with a segmented carapace that reminded her of a giant pill bug. On its back, a huge mounted turret was taking aim at them. Trigg and Nielsen opened fire, along with the Marines. Then Joris and Vera surprised them all by stepping forward and moving as one, slashing with their arms and shouting a shared word. A burst of searing light obscured the room. Kira blinked, fear jolting through her at being suddenly blind. Crimson dots mottled her vision as the light faded. In front of their group, she saw a fine net of monofilaments covering the walls, the broken corner of the building, and the vehicle outside, which was curled on its side and convulsing as tendrils of electricity crawled across the plates of its exposed carapace. In the distance, more jellies were approaching.
Run!
The entropist shouted. They ran.
What did you do?
Kira shouted.
Magic!
Vera answered, which was wholly unsatisfying, but Kira didn't have the breath to question her further. They broke through the back of the building and, across another plaza, Kira spotted the mausoleum-like structure she'd identified from the air. The two other armored Marines were crouched by the closed-off entrance, the blue-white light of cutting torches bright beneath their metal gauntlets. They switched off the torches and laid down covering fire as Kira and her companions sprinted across the plaza. One of the Marines next to Koyich stumbled and fell. Blood and bone sprayed from his knee. Trigg picked him up with one hand and carried him the rest of the way to the temple. Kira dropped behind a slab of rubble, using it for cover while she caught her breath. If the jellies got close enough, she could take them out with the soft blade. But so far, they'd kept their distance. They knew what they were dealing with, and they were behaving accordingly, goddammit. Did they have to be so smart? A jelly drone popped up over the top of the slab. Nielsen fried it with a single burst of laser fire from her exo. Through her faceplate, she appeared red-faced and sweating. Strands of hair had broken free of her ponytail and fallen across her face. Behind another slab, Trigg laid the Marine with the mangled knee onto the ground. "Redding," said the tag on the front of his skin suit. Sanchez ran over to them, and before Kira could believe what she was seeing, he took his blaster and sliced off the rest of the Marine's wounded leg. Redding didn't even scream, but he screwed his eyes shut during the cut. He must have been using a nerve block to stop the pain. Sanchez cinched a tourniquet around the stump of the leg, sprayed the bloody end with metafoam, and then slapped the man on the shoulder and joined the rest of the Marines in firing over the tops of the rubble. Kira looked at the front of the temple. The entrance was sealed with what looked like a plug of solid metal. The two Marines had only managed to cut into it a hand's breadth or less. Dirt showered her as Nielsen and Trigg grabbed the slab of stone she was crouching behind and, with their exos, heaved it upright so it formed a barrier between them and the jellies gathering at the edges of the plaza. The Marines did the same with the other slabs, setting them in a semicircle before the temple.
If you're gonna do something, now's the time,
said Falcone, reloading Francesca from the pouch on his belt.
Fuck that, said Koyich. Use shape charges, blow it open.
No, said Kira, you could destroy the staff.
Koyich ducked as bullets and shrapnel whined overhead. He pulled the tab on another canister of chalk and threw it into the center of the plaza.
We'll get destroyed if we can't get in there.
An image flashed through Kira's mind of the moment when she'd ripped the transmitter out of the wall of the jelly ship.
Just hold them off,
she said, scrambling to her feet. Keeping her head down, she ran to the blocked entrance of the temple and put her hands against the cold metal. Sweat dripped into her eyes as she loosened her grip on the soft blade, just a fraction, and reached out with the suit, stretching and spreading herself like a rubber sheet pulled taut.
Don't lose control. Don't lose control.
A bullet flattened itself against the metal above her head, spraying her with silvery spall. Kira hunched her shoulders and tried to ignore the constant battering explosions of gunfire and grenades. Her skin crawled as the soft blade tore open her skin suit and formed a web of knotting tendrils between her fingers. The tendrils extended outward, flowing across the metal surface, seeking and grasping with millions of hair-like feelers.
Thule!
Trigg exclaimed. Might want to hurry. Falcone said in a conversational tone. Kira pressed inward with the Xeno, driving it into every cranny and crevice and microscopic stress fracture. She felt the Xeno, felt herself, burrowing through the bonded structure of the metal, like tree roots digging through hard-packed earth. The metal was incredibly thick. Meters upon meters of it armored the entrance to the temple. What were they trying to keep out? She wondered. Then it occurred to her that perhaps the soft blade was the answer to that question. Heat radiated from the surface of the metal as it began to give.
Get ready!
She shouted. The moment she felt movement between her various extruded tendrils, she yanked, hard. With an anguished shriek, the metal parted. Glittering dust filled the air as the fibers of the suit pulled heavy, silver-gray chunks away from the building. A dark opening took shape before her. Overhead, three more jelly ships screamed across the sky, meteors trailing fire and smoke. From them fell scores of drop pods, evil seeds planted throughout the city. Too late, Kira thought, triumphant. She returned the soft blade to herself, and again she was whole. 4. Bullets whined off the sides of the jagged metal, and laser blasts melted finger-sized holes, splattering molten droplets in every direction, as Kira pushed forward into the darkness. Falcone followed close behind, then Trigg, Nielsen, and the rest of the squad. The Marines activated flat, hemispherical glow lights, which they tossed around the perimeter of the space. The room was huge and deep. Even with the crazed collection of lights, Kira recognized the sweep of the arched ceiling and the pattern of the tessellated floor. This place she had walked long ago, beside the Highmost, near the end of days. A graveyard chill gave her pause, and she said quietly, "Everyone be careful. Don't touch anything." Behind her, Hawes snapped orders, and the Marines took aim at the ragged opening they'd entered through.
"Hold this spot," said Koyich. "Don't let a single jelly past." "Sir, yes, sir."
As Kira ventured deeper into the darkness, Falcone joined her, as did Koyich, Nielsen, Trigg, and the Entropists. But they let her take the lead as she headed toward the back of the space. Now that they were inside the temple, Kira knew exactly where to go. There was no question in her mind. Ancient memories assured her that this was the right place, and that what she sought was just ahead. Gunshots continued to echo through the cavernous chamber, loud and thunderous. How long had the place lain in silence? And now the violence of jellies and humans fighting had shattered that peace. Kira wondered who the vanished would fault most if they were still around. 30 meters from the entrance, the room ended at an enormously tall, thin pair of outward curving doors, white and inlaid with fractal lines of blue. They were far more ornate than anything else she'd seen in the city. Kira raised a hand. Before she touched the doors, a ring of light appeared near the height of her head, overlapping the seam between the two doors. Then they parted without sound, sliding into the walls and disappearing into hidden recesses. Another room lay before them, smaller than the antechamber. It was heptagonal in shape, with a ceiling that twinkled as if with stars, and a floor that possessed a faint, iridescent sheen like that of a soap bubble. At each vertex of the room stood a crystalline obelisk, blue-white and translucent, save for the one opposite her, which was red and black. It, like the others, had a stern look, as if watching over the chamber with a disapproving gaze. But it was the center of the room that drew Kira's attention. 3 steps, too high and shallow to be comfortable for human anatomy, led to a dais, also heptagonal. From the dais rose a pedestal, and from the pedestal, a 4-sided case that sparkled like cut diamond. Within the diamond case, there hung suspended 7 shards, the staff of blue, now broken. Kira stared. She could not bring herself to understand or accept. "No," she whispered. Then alerts flashed in her overlays, and despite herself she looked. A groan escaped her, and it echoed in the mausoleum of the vanished. 14 more ships had entered the system. Not jellies. Nightmares. Chapter 4. Terror. 1. They were surrounded. They would have to stand and fight, and they would likely die. Kira's mind whirled as the reality of the situation clamped shut around her, like an iron coffin. There was no escape this time. No trick or turn or hope of reprieve. They were too far from anywhere to expect help, and neither the jellies nor the nightmares would show them mercy. It was all her fault, and it wasn't something she could fix.
Is it supposed to be like that?
Falcone asked, his voice harsh. He indicated the broken staff. No, said Kira.
Can you fix it?
Said Koyich, echoing her thoughts.
No, I don't even know if it can be fixed. That's not an acceptable answer, Navarez. We—
Boom! The building shuddered. Pieces of the starry ceiling crashed to the floor, the heavens coming undone. The diamond case swayed and fell, shattered, sending the pieces of the staff of blue flying in different directions. The entropists bent to pick up one of the shards. Through the doorway to the inner sanctum, Kira saw the front of the temple had been blown apart. The jelly's pillbug-like vehicle was parked outside, no longer incapacitated, main gun trained on their location. The Marines were retreating from the jagged opening, even as they peppered the vehicle with bullets and lasers. Sparks erupted from the side of the pillbug's gun as the concentrated fire slagged it.
Falcone, how far out is the wallfish?
Said Koyich, shouldering his gun as he moved to the side of the doorway.
15 minutes, said Falcone, taking the other side. Shit! Get in here! Move!
Koyich shouted at his men, even while firing into the clouds of smoke and chaff, as precise as a machine.
Pin down, said Hawes. Got wounded! Can't—
The clumping thuds of Nielsen's exo startled Kira, as the woman charged past her, into the front area of the temple. Falcone swore, and fired 3 grenades in quick succession to buy her some time. As each grenade detonated, it cleared a spherical area of smoke, chalk, and dust. Then the gray-white haze rushed in, obscuring the view once more. Feeling ashamed of herself, Kira ran after Nielsen. She saw the first officer pick up a pair of downed Marines and sprint back toward the inner part of the temple. Kira spotted another wounded Marine, only this one still in his exo. She slid to a stop next to him and hit the quick-release latches on the side of the machine. The front casing popped open, and the man fell out, coughing blood.
Let's go,
said Kira, slipping his arm over her shoulders. Half-carrying him, she hurried toward the doorway to the sanctum. Nielsen had already dropped off her casualties and was returning to the open. A numbing impact hit Kira on the right side, causing her to fall to one knee. She glanced down and immediately wished she hadn't. The black fibers along her ribs were blown out like a spray of needles. Blood, muscle, and bone were visible, scattered between. Even as she looked, the fibers knitted together as they began to close over the wound. She gasped and pushed against the floor with legs that had lost all feeling, trying to continue moving forward. 1 step, 2 steps, and then she was walking again, with the man's weight still heavy on her shoulder. As she cleared the doorway, Falcone took the man off her. Kira immediately turned to head back out, but Falcone caught her by the arm.
Don't be stupid, he said.
She shook him off and headed deeper into the clouds, looking for the last few Marines. Outside the temple, more explosions, more gunfire. If not for the soft blade, Kira doubted she would have been able to think or function amid the noise. Each blast was a concussion strong enough to feel in her bones, and the objects around her blurred from the force of the blows. The noise seemed to be increasing, too. Where are they? She couldn't see any jellies through the mess of smoke, only twisted, incomprehensible shapes thrashing in the murk.
S-jams incoming, barked Koyich. Hit the deck!
Kira dropped flat, covering her head. A half second later, 4 separate explosions struck the streets surrounding the plaza, lighting up the area with a hellish blaze. The ground rippled and smacked Kira in the cheek, causing her teeth to clack together with painful force.
Status, said Koyich. Get me eyes on hostiles.
Looks like we took out most of them, said Haas, but can't tell for sure. Waiting for a better view.
The explosions had only added to the swirling clouds, thickening them to the point where it was nearly pitch black in the plaza. Kira listened. She no longer heard gunfire, nor the sounds of moving jellies. As the wind began to clear the air, she risked poking her head up and looking around.
Clang!
Across the exposed antechamber of the temple, Nielsen staggered back, a large dent in the front of her power armor. She fired her arm-mounted machine gun several times into the haze, and Kira heard the splatter of bullets hitting flesh. Down the clogged streets, she saw dozens more heat spots approaching. More jellies. Trig came running out of the temple's inner sanctum, heading for Nielsen. As he skidded to a stop beside her, Koyich said,
That's all the help we can expect from the Omora. We'll be lucky if they don't go after her for setting off those S-gems. Get everyone inside! Make it fast!
There were still four Marines on the ground. Kira started toward the nearest one. One of the jelly's white drones flew into view around the edge of the temple's broken facade, while at the same time, a large tentacled squid climbed over the mounded rubble, a pair of blasters held by its twisting limbs. Kira scrabbled for her weapon but couldn't find it. Where was it? Had she dropped it? There wasn't enough time. No time. No time. Trig jumped in front of Nielsen, firing his blaster and his rifle at the same time. His face was contorted and he was screaming over the radio.
Yeah! Come on, you fucker! Eat it!
The white, orb-shaped drone spun as bullets slammed into it, and then it sparked and tumbled to the ground. Behind it, the squid flinched, raised a tentacle holding a long, bar-shaped railgun. The soft blade pulsed outward as it struggled to attack. Out of habit, Kira resisted, unwilling to let go, unwilling to trust the Xeno. Bang! The sound from the jelly's weapon was short and sharp. It cut through the commotion like auditory punctuation. Startling silence followed. Trig's gun ceased firing as his armor locked up, and then he slowly toppled backward, a statue falling. Centered on the front of his visor was a finger-sized hole, and frozen on his face, a look of terrible surprise.
No!
Falcone shouted. Shock paralyzed Kira for a moment, and then horrified understanding spurred her back into action.
Too slow.
She relaxed her hold on the soft blade and reached out with it, intending to loose the Xeno and tear the jelly to shreds. Before she could, a woman in a skin suit ran in front of the squid, waving a piece of white cloth.
You heard me, go!
Around. Kira froze, unable to process what she was seeing. As the stranger clambered into the temple, the gold sheen of her visor cleared to reveal a hard, lined face. For a moment, Kira only saw a collection of unfamiliar features. Then her perspective shifted, and the planet seemed to tilt underneath her.
You,
she said.
Navarez,
said Major Cheddar. 2. More jellies gathered around the broken front of the temple, but for some reason they didn't shoot, so Kira ignored them as she rushed to Trig's side. Falcone and the squad's medic were only a step behind. The medic removed Trig's helmet with practiced speed, and pooled blood poured out across the tessellated floor in bright crimson streaks. The kid was still conscious, his white-rimmed eyes darting around with a panicked look. A bullet had hit him near the base of his neck, ripping apart the arteries. Blood pumped out at a frightening rate, each spurt weaker than the last. His mouth worked, but no words came forth, only a horrible bubbling sound, the desperate gasps of a drowning swimmer.
My fault,
Kira berated herself. She should have acted faster. She should have trusted the Xeno. If only she hadn't been so focused on control, she would have been able to protect the kid. From a pocket, the medic produced an oxygen mask that he fixed over Trig's mouth. Then he took a canister of metafoam, pressed the nozzle into the center of the wound, and sprayed. Trig's eyes rolled back, and his breathing stuttered. His arms began to quiver. The medic stood.
He needs cryo. Unless you can get the Ilmora here in the next few minutes, he's dead.
As he spoke, Nielsen got back to her feet, holding a hand against the dent in her chest plate. He pointed a finger at her.
Need help?
I'll survive,
she said. With that, the medic hurried past to the Marines waiting for his attention.
Can we?
Kira started to say to Koyich.
The Ilmora's already on her way.
Kira looked to the sky. After a few seconds, she heard the distinctive rumble of an approaching rocket.
Where should—
A trio of laser beams, each beam equal to the output from a dozen handheld blasters, stabbed upward from somewhere beyond the outskirts of the city. A second later, a burning star plummeted through the shelf of clouds. The Ilmora, trailing blue shock diamonds and a line of white exhaust. The shuttle vanished behind the flank of the nearest mountain, and a blinding flash illuminated the valley, sending shadows streaming eastward from the base of the buildings.
Cover!
Koyich shouted, diving behind a pile of rubble. Falcone threw himself across Trigg. Kira did likewise, using a net of fibers from the soft blade to hold them in place. She counted the seconds in her head. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The floor buckled, and the direction of the wind reversed as the shockwave hit, louder and more powerful than 1,000 claps of thunder. With it came a wave of suffocating heat. The towers swayed and groaned, chunks of walls flying free, and streamers of dirt blasted through the howling streets. Debris filled the air, deadly as any bullet. Dozens of fragments shotgunned the rubble they huddled behind. Beneath her arm, Kira saw the cratered body of the pillbug blown away into the dark. She glanced up. A gigantic mushroom cloud rose above the mountain, climbing toward the stratosphere. The pillar of nuclear fury was staggeringly huge. Before it, she felt smaller than she ever had before. If not for the protection of the mountain, they would all be dead. She released Falcone and Trigg from the net of fibers. Falcone said,
Was that?
The Ilmora's gone,
said Koyich. The bulk of the explosion would have come from the antimatter stored within the shuttle's Markov drive. What now? Things had just gone from bad to apocalyptically bad. As the howl of the wind began to subside, they got to their feet. Trigg was still twitching. Kira could tell he didn't have long to live. The jellies had gathered close around them during the blast. Now Cheddar stood next to one, and she seemed to be speaking to it, although Kira heard nothing. The squid started to move toward Trigg. Falcone hissed and lifted his grenade launcher, and Kira crouched, extruding razor-sharp blades from her fingers.
Stay the fuck away or I'll blast you to pieces, said the captain.
My companions say they can help, said Cheddar.
Is that why they shot him?
Cheddar made a regretful expression.
It was a mistake.
Sure. And just who the fuck are you?
Falcone's nostrils were flared, his eyes narrowed and savage. The woman's back stiffened.
Major Elena Cheddar, of the UMCI, human and loyal citizen of the League of Allied Worlds.
She's the one I told you about, Kira muttered to Falcone.
From the extenuating circumstances?
Kira nodded, keeping her gaze fixed on Cheddar and the jellies. Falcone seemed unimpressed.
How?
Nielsen put a hand on his shoulders.
Trigg's not going to make it if you don't let them help.
Make up your mind, Falcone, said Koyich. We don't have time to be dicking around.
After a moment, Falcone shook off Nielsen's hand and backed away from Trigg, still pointing Francesca at the aliens.
Fine, but if they kill him, I'll shoot them, no questions asked.
Outside, the mushroom cloud continued to climb. Kira kept the blades on her fingers as the squid crawled over to Trigg. Moving as precisely and delicately as any surgeon, the jelly used its tentacles to disassemble Trigg's power armor, until the kid lay on the crumbled floor in nothing but his skin suit and oxygen mask. Then the jelly wrapped a single, thick tentacle around him, and within seconds, a thick, gelatinous substance began to ooze from its suckers.
What the hell is that?
Said Falcone in a barely controlled tone.
It's okay, said Cheddar. They did it to me. It's safe.
The jelly used its tentacle to smear the goo over the whole of Trigg's body. Then the coating grew opaque and hardened, forming a glistening human-shaped pod. The whole process took less than a minute. The alien laid the pod on the floor and retreated to Cheddar's side. Falcone put a hand on top of the shell. What did they do? Can he still breathe in there? We don't have time for...
It's their form of cryo, said Shedder. Trust me, he'll be fine.
In the distance, gunfire again sounded in the streets, and several of the jellies slipped away, heading toward the noise. Shedder drew herself up and looked at Kira, Koyich, and what remained of the rest of their group.
They'll buy us some breathing room. In the meantime, we need to talk. Now.
3.
How do we know you're really you?
Koyich demanded. He had been present, Kira remembered, when she'd told Akawe about having to leave the Major and Corporal Iska on Adrastea. Shedder's lips quirked as she seated herself on a block of rubble and looked at Kira.
I seem to recall asking you something similar on the extenuating circumstances.
The Major was much as Kira remembered, although she seemed thinner, as if she'd lost 4 or 5 kilos, and there was a certain manic intensity to her expression that hadn't been present before. Maybe it was a result of current circumstances, or maybe it was indicative of something else. Kira wasn't sure. She was having trouble wrapping her mind around Shedder's presence. Kira had never expected to see the Major again, much less there, on a dead planet at the far end of space. The sheer incongruity left Kira feeling even more dazed than the explosion earlier. Falcone crossed his arms.
The jellies could have scanned your implants, learned everything they needed in order to impersonate you.
It doesn't matter if you believe me, said Shedder. Who I am has nothing to do with why I'm here. Koyich eyed her skeptically.
And why are you here, Major?
First things first, did you find a staff of blue? When neither Kira nor anyone else answered, Shedder snapped her fingers.
This is important. Do you have it or not? We need to know, now.
Koyich motioned toward the entropists.
Show her.
Vera and Joris extended their hands. In them lay one fragment of the staff of blue.
It's broken, Shedder said, her tone bleak.
Yes. Her shoulders slumped.
Damn it, she said quietly. The jellies were counting on using the staff against the corrupted.
That's their name for the nightmares. Without it. She drew herself upright, stiffening her back.
I'm not sure how much of a chance we stand. Dem Oras.
Is it really that bad? Kira asked. The Major nodded, grim.
Worse. The corrupted have been hitting the jellies throughout their territory. Small raids at first, then bigger and bigger. Some of the corrupted were already poking around Sigma Draconis when Iska and I got picked up. They took out 2 of the jelly ships, and the one we were on barely got away.
What are the corrupted? Kira asked.
Do you know?
Shedder shook her head.
Only that the jellies are scared shitless of them. The jellies say they've fought the corrupted before. From what I gather, it didn't go well, and the current batch of corrupted are supposedly even more dangerous. They have different forms, better ships, that sort of thing. Also, the jellies seem convinced that we have something to do with the corrupted, but I'm not clear on the details.
Nielsen raised a hand.
How do you know what we call the jellies in the nightmares? And how are you talking with the jellies? The jellies, said Shedder, have been monitoring all the broadcasts out of the League. They brought me up to date before we left.
She tapped the front of her helmet.
Talking is sent to sound and vice versa. Same method the jellies use for conversion to EM signals. Made it possible to actually learn their language, though it sure as hell wasn't easy.
Koyich shifted impatiently.
You still haven't explained. Why are you here, Major? And why are the jellies with you playing nice?
Shedder took a breath. The gunfire in the streets was growing closer.
The details are in a file I'm sending you. The short version is that the jellies with me represent a faction that wants to overthrow their leadership and form an alliance with the League in order to ensure the survival of both of our species. But they need our help to pull that off.
By the looks on everyone's faces, Kira wasn't the only one having trouble wrapping their mind around the situation. Koyich's yellow eyes narrowed, and he glanced skyward.
You getting this, Captain?
After a few seconds, Akawe answered.
Loud and clear. Major, if this is true, why didn't you approach the League directly? Why come all the way out here to make the offer? Because, as I just said, the jellies are monitoring all transmissions in and out of human space. My companions couldn't risk trying to contact the Premier directly. If their superiors noticed, they'd be caught and executed. Plus, there was a matter of the Staff of Blue and a need to keep Kira and her suit from falling into the wrong hands.
I see. All right, I'll look at the file. In the meantime, you need to find a way off that rock. We're tied down at the moment, and you've got jellies and nightmares incoming.
Roger that, said Koyich.
There's more, said Shedder hurriedly. The Jellies are building a massive fleet just outside the leak. As soon as it's ready, they're going to sweep through and crush our forces before concentrating on the Corrupted. I'm told the Jellies have been planning on conquering us for a long time, but recent events have accelerated their timetable. The Jelly leadership is going to be on site for several months to oversee the completion of the fleet. What my companions are proposing is that the UMC rendezvous with them near the fleet, and that we coordinate a surgical strike to decapitate their government.
A muffled explosion sounded farther off in the city. The fighting seemed to have turned so it was moving sideways to the plaza and the temple-like structure.
Are your friends 100% sure that their leaders will be with the fleet? Akawe asked.
That's what they claim, said Shedder. For whatever it's worth, they seem to be telling the truth.
Akawe made a sound deep in his throat.
Understood. Even if this intel ends up being a bust, getting it back to the League just became our top priority. The Jellies are jamming the whole system, so that rules out a direct signal. Would take too long in any case. At this distance, only high-power, slow-as-ass signals would make it back. That means at least one of our ships has to get out of here, and that's gonna take some doing.
While Akawe was talking, Falcone walked a few steps away, his lips moving silently. Then he swore loudly enough to be audible through his helmet.
God damn it! I don't believe it!
What?
Said Kira. He grimaced.
The coolant line Hua Chung repaired back at Signy just broke again. The wallfish can't stop until they fix it. They're gonna fly right past us.
Shit.
My companions have two ships out by the edge of the city, said Shedder, gesturing at the Jellies behind her, who had been waiting patiently the entire time. They can get you back into space.
Kira glanced at Falcone, Koyich, and Nielsen. She could tell they were all thinking the same thing. Trust the Jellies enough to get onto their ships? What if they decided to strip her of the soft blade? Would she be able to stop them?
I'm sure you're right, Major, said Koyich. But I'm not exactly thrilled with the idea.
Akawe broke in.
Too bad, Commander. You need to get off that rock, and now. As for you, Major, if this is a trap, the Darmstadt will blow up both your ships before you get out of the system, so don't let your friends get any ideas.
Shedder jerked her head as if she were about to salute.
Yes, sir. No, sir.
Koyich started to turn away.
All right, we need to...
Wait,
Kira said, and went to stand directly in front of Shedder.
I have a question.
Stow it, Nevarez, Koyich snapped. We don't have the time.
Kira didn't budge.
Why do the Jellies think we started this war? They're the ones who attacked the extenuating circumstances.
Koyich paused, his finger resting on the trigger of his blaster.
I'd like to know that as well, Major.
Shedder spoke quickly.
The Jellies I've been dealing with placed Dezino on Adra in order to hide it from the rest of their species. Apparently, Dezino was a major threat in the past, and the Jellies seem to view it with a mix of fear and reverence. From what they've told me, their group would have done anything, anything, to keep Dezino from bonding with another host.
So that's why they showed up shooting, said Kira. Shedder nodded.
From their point of view, we were no different than thieves who'd broken into a top-secret military installation. Imagine how the UMC would have reacted. That still doesn't explain why the rest of the Jellies have been attacking us, said Koyich. Did your friends tell them what happened at Adra?
The Major didn't hesitate.
Absolutely not. As far as I can tell, the majority of Jellies only found out about Kira when she sent the signal from 61 Signy.
She made a wry face.
That was when my friends here hauled me out of a cell and started actually talking with me. Point is, as far as the Jelly leadership was concerned, this war started when the Corrupted started attacking them out of nowhere while broadcasting messages in English. That's why they thought we were allied. That and because, at the time, the Corrupted weren't attacking human territory.
But the Jellies still planned on invading us no matter what, Falcone said.
That's right.
Kira spoke then. Do the Corrupted know about the staff or the soft blade? Shedder stood.
The staff, I can't say. But the Jellies seem to think the Corrupted are drawn to the presence of the suitor, something like that. I'm not entirely sure, given the language barrier.
As if to punctuate her words, a double set of sonic booms shook the valley, and four dark, angular ships descended screaming from the sky and crashed into the city at various locations. They didn't look like the Corrupted ships from 61 Signy, but there was still a sense of wrongness about them that Kira couldn't shake. The thought that the nightmares might be specifically hunting her was deeply disturbing. Sounds of gunfire and laser pulses bounced off the towers of the city, distorted heralds of violence. Half a click away, maybe less. The fighting was growing closer again.
"That's it! Everyone form up!" said Koyich. "We gotta hustle!"
Shedder said.
"Let me make sure my companions understand the plan."
She turned to the jellies and started talking, her voice now inaudible in her helmet. While the Major talked, Kira ripped off her torn skin suit. It would just get in the way. And besides, she wanted to... Yes, there it was. The near scent of the assembled jellies. With the skin of the soft blade fully exposed, she could sense the swirling cues from the jellies as they watched and reacted to their surroundings. She should have stripped earlier. She could have been putting her questions directly to the aliens. The leader of the jellies was obvious from the forms and structures of the scents used. It was a huge squid, with a dark layer of flexible armor coating on its limbs. Armor that, to Kira's eye, was not so different from the soft blade. She approached the alien and said,
"Kira here. What is your name, Shoal Leader?"
The collected jellies stirred with surprise, their tentacles shifting and turning with a life of their own.
"Lafette here. The Idealis lets you scent us. What else has..."
A series of choppy explosions interrupted them. The sounds were dangerously close. Approaching via an eastbound street was a large swarm of jellies who were exchanging fire with a pair of retreating squids that Kira assumed belonged to Lafette. And converging upon them via several of the westbound streets were masses of twisted bodies climbing over the piles of rubble and even climbing over themselves, tortured flesh that was red and black and melted like the scars on Falcone's forearms. An army of the corrupted, an army of nightmares. Then a crack sounded behind them, loud as a gunshot. Kira crouched and whirled, expecting to be ambushed. In the depths of the temple's inner sanctum, the dark obelisk fractured, white lines racing across its surface, shedding dust. The nape of Kira's neck prickled as the front of the pillar fell forward with a doom-laden peal. The obelisk was hollow. Inside it stirred a tall, angular something. A figure as lean as a skeleton, with legs that jointed backwards, and two pairs of arms. A cloak of black seemed to hang from its pointed shoulders, and a hard, hood-like shape hid all its face, save the crimson eyes that burned within that shadowed recess. Kira hadn't thought it possible to be any more afraid. She was wrong, for she recognized the creature from her dreams. It wasn't one of the vanished, but one of their dread servants. It was a seeker, and that meant death. Chapter 5. Sic Itur ad Astra. 1. The seeker was moving, but slowly, as if disoriented after its long sleep.
"Run!" said Kira to both humans and jellies. "Now! Don't stop! Don't fight! Run!"
"Lafette here! A mind ripper! Flee!"
The jellies threw down a smokescreen, hiding the seeker from sight, and together, they and the Marines scrambled out the broken front of the temple. Kira's heart was pounding with panic she couldn't suppress. A seeker. She remembered them from ages past. Creatures made to enforce the word of the Heptarchy. A single one had wreaked havoc on the jellies during the sundering. She feared to think what it might do to the League if it escaped the planet. Nielsen carried Trigg's mummified form in her arms as they clambered into the open. Falcone guarded her left, Kira her right.
"This way,"
said Shedder, leading them toward a narrow side street next to the temple, one that for the moment was empty of enemies. Across the plaza, the two jellies that had been fighting a delaying action tossed drones into the air and then abandoned their cover and sprinted on tentacles across the open space to join their companions. Orange ichor dripped from several holes in the carapace of the alien on the right.
"What was that thing?"
cried Nielsen, hunching over to protect Trigg.
"Bad news," said Kira.
The mushroom cloud still towered high overhead, overwhelming in its size. The wind tore at the central column, dragging streaks of it westward into the planet's night side. A burnt, dirt-like smell pervaded the air, and the electric tang of ozone also, as if from an impending storm. But the storm had already struck, in the form of annihilating antimatter. Kira wondered how well the soft blade would protect her from the fallout. If they actually made it back into space, she'd have to get some radiation pills from the medic. A terrifying chorus of beast-like yammering erupted several streets over, thousands of voices crying out with anger and pain. A wave of near-scent wafted through the city, stifling in its strength as the unseen nightmares clashed with the pursuing jellies.
"Out of the frying pan, and into the fire," said Joris and Vera.
Behind them, a high, keening sound cut the air, and if anything, the yammering intensified.
"Shit! Check this out," said Haas.
On Kira's overlays, a window popped up with a feed from one of the Marines' remaining drones, hovering high above the plaza by the temple. The Seeker had emerged from within the ruined building and was stalking among the banks of smoke while clumps of jellies and nightmares fought around it. Even as Kira watched, the Seeker seized a red, dog-like nightmare and sank its black fingers into its skull. After half a second, the Seeker released the nightmare, dropped it on the ground. The creature twisted back onto its feet, and then, instead of attacking the Seeker, slunk behind it, faithful as a trained pet. Nor was it the only one. A half dozen jellies and nightmares already attended the Seeker, ranging about it in a swirling group that protected it from direct attack. Neither the jellies nor the nightmares seemed to have noticed the Seeker yet. They were so busy fighting each other.
"Gods," said Nielsen. "What is it doing?"
"I'm not sure," said Kira.
"Lafett here. The Mind Ripper controls your body, makes you do what it wants."
The Seeker could do more than that, Kira felt sure, but she couldn't remember specifics, which was frustrating. She trusted her fear, though. If the soft blade was telling her to be careful, then the threat was indeed great. Shedder translated, and Koyich said,
"If it gets close, don't let it touch you."
"Yes, sir. Not a chance, sir,"
said the Marines. As a group, they were looking rather battered. Tetupoa was carrying Redding, the Marine who had lost his leg. Nishu had blood smeared across his exo. Haas and the team medic were limping, and most of the men had pits and dings on their helmet from debris. Two of the Marines from the Darmstadt seemed to be missing. Kira wasn't sure where or when they'd fallen. A crash sounded above them. Kira looked up to see a cluster of nightmares running along a vine-draped ledge that wrapped around a nearby tower. The Marines opened fire, and the jellies too, a hammering volley from automatic rifles and discharging blasters. The shot stopped several of the nightmares, blasting apart raw, scabrous-looking torsos, but the rest jumped down into their group. Two landed on Marines, driving them to the ground. The creatures were the size of a tiger maul, with rows of shark-like teeth as big as Kira's hand. Three more nightmares, each with wildly different shapes, one sporting arms lined with spurs of bone, one with scaled wings sprouting from a crooked back, one fanged and tripod-legged, crashed into Lafette's jellies amid a tangle of thrashing tentacles.
"Different than before," was Kira's first thought as she saw the nightmares hurtling toward them.
She wasn't going to hold back as she had during the attack on Trig. She'd rather die first. Willing the soft blade to spike outward, she ran to tackle the nightmare grappling with the nearest Marine, Sanchez. The black thorns from her suit pierced the four-legged nightmare, and it died with a terrifyingly human scream, while blood gurgled from its loose throat.
"Don't hurt him," Kira thought.
To her relief, the soft blade obeyed the thought, and none of its spikes touched Sanchez. He gave her a quick thumbs up. She started toward the next of the nightmares, but her help was unneeded. The combined firepower of the Marines and the allied jellies had already killed the rest of the creatures. Falcone wiped a smear of blood off his visor, his expression grim.
"Now they know where we are."
"Keep moving,"
Koyich barked, and their group continued down the street.
"We're getting low on ammo," Haas said.
"I see that," said Koyich. "Switch to two-round bursts."
They concentrated on running.
"Contact!"
shouted a Marine as he loosed several rounds at a nightmare that appeared around the corner of a building. The creature's head exploded in a red mist.
Hemoglobin, Kira thought. Iron-based blood, unlike the jellies.
The nightmares continued to harass them in ones and twos as they raced to the city's edge. When the buildings gave way to moss-covered ground, Kira checked on the situation in orbit. The wallfish had already passed by the planet and was heading toward the outer reaches of the system. A mess of jelly and nightmare ships were fighting high overhead, both sides against one another, and the jellies also against themselves. The Darmstadt was still some distance away from Nidus, but inbound fast. Smoke trailed from several burn marks along the cruiser's hull.
"Follow me,"
said Shedder, taking the lead over the blasted land. The moss there lay outside the shadow of the city. It had been exposed to the full fury of the nuclear explosion and had burned beneath the heat. The small fronds crunched with each step, leaving an ashy residue on their soles. They headed westward, away from the buildings, deeper into the dusky dark. As they ran, Kira maneuvered herself to Cheddar's side and said,
"After you were rescued, did you tell the jellies I was still alive?"
The Major shook her head.
"Of course not. I wasn't about to give our enemies actionable information."
"So Lafette and the rest of them didn't know where I was or that the suit existed?"
"Not until you sent your signal."
Cheddar shot her a glance.
"In fact, they never actually asked. I think they assumed the suit had been destroyed along with the extenuating circumstances. Why?"
Kira took a moment to gather her breath.
"Just trying to understand."
Something about Cheddar's explanations didn't seem right. Why wouldn't the jellies that hid the soft blade be curious about its location following the events at Adra? If they'd bothered to carry out a flash trace, they would have seen the Valkyrie leaving Sigma Draconis. Surely that would have been enough to track her to 61 Cygni. So why hadn't they? And then there was the question of the nightmares.
"Is Iska with you?"
Kira asked Cheddar. The Major didn't answer for a moment. Her expression labored from exertion.
"He stayed behind in case anything happened to me."
"So how did you find us?"
"Lafette knew about the ship sent to track you down. We just followed them. It wasn't hard. Corrupted must have done the same."
A shriek sounded overhead, and a cluster of dark shapes dove toward them, flapping bat-like wings. Kira ducked while lashing out with one arm. She connected with a solid, disturbingly soft body, and then the suit hardened, forming an edge, and her arm sliced through flesh and bone with hardly any resistance. A shower of orange ichor covered her. The rest of their group suffered a similar fate, as humans and jellies alike shot down the flock. The creatures had mandibles for mouths, and tiny arms with pincers tucked close against their downy breasts. When the shooting stopped, three of the Marines were lying motionless on the ground, and half a dozen more appeared injured. Nishu kicked one of the downed creatures.
"No sense of self-preservation, these."
"Yeah," said Tatupoa, bending to pick up one of his wounded teammates.
"Real eager-like to get themselves killed."
"Kira here, are these things yours?"
She pointed at the winged corpses.
"Olfet here. No, these are also corrupted."
Kira's puzzlement deepened as she translated for the rest. Not hemoglobin this time, and there seemed to be no consistency among the shapes of the different nightmares. At least with the jellies, it was clear the various types were somehow related, what with their shared blood, skin markings, muscle fibers, and the like. The nightmares lacked any such cohesion, aside from the consistently diseased look of their hides. Cheddar gestured at a ridge of rock that rose before them.
"The ships are just ahead, on the other side."
As they trotted up the ridge, the Marines trailing along as they helped their injured, Nielsen said,
"Look at the sky."
The mushroom cloud had punched a large circular hole in the overcast sky. Through the opening, in the tattered billows of mist, Kira saw great sheets of color rippling across the twinkling expanse. Reds and blues and green yellows, shifting like ribbons of gossamer silk in a vast neon display, thousands of kilometers across. The sight left Kira awestruck. She had only seen the aurora a few times on Wayland, and never in anything but the darkest night. It looked unreal. It looked like a bad overlay, too bright and smooth and colorful to be natural.
"What's causing it?"
she asked.
"Nukes, or antimatter in the upper atmosphere," said Shudder. "Anything that dumps charged particles into the ionosphere."
Kira shivered. The sight was beautiful, and yet, knowing its cause, terrifying.
"It'll die down in a few hours," said Hawes.
At the top of the ridge, Kira paused to glance at the city behind them. She wasn't the only one. A horde of bodies was streaming out of the overgrown streets, nightmares and jellies together, their previous differences now forgotten. And walking along behind them, the Seeker, tall, skeletal, almost monastic in appearance with its seeming hood and cape. The seeker stopped at the edge of the buildings. The same high-pitched keen rang out over the fields of blasted moss, and the seeker spread both pairs of arms. Its cape lifted as well, unfolding to reveal a pair of wings, veined and purplish, and nearly 9 meters across.
Moros, said Koyich in a surprisingly conversational tone. See if you can put a bullet through that bastard's head.
Kira nearly objected, but she held her tongue. If there was a chance they could kill the seeker, it would be for the best, even though a part of her would mourn the loss of a creature so old, capable, and obviously intelligent.
You got it, sir,
said one of the Marines in power armor. He stepped forward, lifted one arm, and without a moment's delay, fired. The seeker's head snapped to one side. Then it slowly looked back at them with what Kira could only interpret as sheer malevolence.
Did you hit it?
Said Koyich.
No, sir, said Moros. It dodged. It. Marine, nail that thing with the strongest laser blast you've got. Yes, sir.
The whine of charging supercapacitors sounded within Moros's armor, and then a bzzt, as loud as any gunshot sounded. Kira's skin tingled from the residual electrical charge. She saw the laser pulse with her thermal sight, a seemingly instantaneous bar of ravening force that joined Moros to the seeker. Only the blast didn't touch the dark-shrouded alien. Rather, it curved around the creature's hide and burned a fist-sized hole in the wall of the building behind. Even at a distance, Kira would have sworn the seeker was smiling, and a memory came to her. It was they that enforced the wishes of the Heptarchy, and they that guarded the dangerous depths of space.
Ulfet here, this is to no point.
As it spoke, the jelly started down the other side of the ridge along with its comrades. Lafette's words needed no translation. Kira followed along with everyone else. The knife-edge keening rang out again, and underlying it, she could hear the drumming of approaching feet. The two jelly ships were parked at the foot of the ridge. The globular vessels weren't particularly large by the standards of spaceships. The Darmstadt would dwarf them in length, but sitting there on the ground, they seemed enormous, as large as the administrative building in Highstone, where she'd gotten her seed license. A loading ramp lowered from the belly of each ship. The jellies divided into two groups, one heading for each ship. Cheddar paired off with Lafette and several other jellies heading toward the left-hand vessel.
You take that one,
she said to Koyich, pointing at the ship on the right.
Come with us, said Kira.
Cheddar never missed a step as she shook her head.
It's safer if we split up. Besides, I'm staying with the jellies. But there's a chance for peace here, Navarez, and I'm not going to give up on it. Go!
Kira would have argued further, but they were out of time. As she sprinted alongside Falcone toward the other jelly ship, she couldn't help but feel grudging admiration for Cheddar. Assuming the Major was still in her right mind, what she was doing was incredibly brave, same as her decision to stay behind on Audra. Kira doubted she would ever like the Major, but she would never question the woman's devotion to duty. More jellies were waiting for them at the top of the loading ramp, guarding the opening with an impressive array of weapons. They moved aside as Kira and the others ran up. Koyich shepherded his men aboard, shouting at them to hurry. They stumbled in, dripping blood from bodies and fluids from exos. Nishu and Moros brought up the rear, and then the ramp retracted, and the ship's loading port slid shut and locked in place, sealing the hull.
I cannot believe we're doing this, Falcone said.
2.
War Knacker here, secure for ascension.
Ridges along the wall made for convenient handholds. Kira snared one, as did the other humans, while the jellies used their tentacles to do likewise, or, in the case of the leg jellies, scurried off into darkened corridors. Like the other jelly ship Kira had been on, this one smelled of brine, and the lighting was a dim, watery blue. The room was an ovoid, with tubes and masses of unidentifiable equipment along one half, and egg-like capsules along the other. Stored on rows of double-layered racks were scores of what she recognized as weapons, blasters, guns, and even blades. In close quarters, the near scent of the jellies accumulated until it nearly obliterated any other odor. The aliens stank of anger and stress and fear. And from them, Kira felt a constant shifting of forms, malfunctions and honorifics. It seemed to Kira that she and her companions were surrounded by monsters. She kept the soft blade on the verge of action, ready to send it spiking out if any of the jellies made a hostile move. Koyich and his marines seemed to feel likewise, for they gathered in a defensive half-circle near the loading door, and while they kept their weapons aimed at the floor, they did not lower them entirely.
"Can you get us to our ship, the Wallfish?" said Falcone.
Then he looked at Kira.
"Can they get us to the Wallfish?"
"The Darmstadt's where we need to be, not your rusty old tub," said Koyich.
"The Wallfish is closer," said Falcone. "Besides..."
Kira repeated Falcone's question, and in answer, the jelly that had spoken earlier said,
"Wernacker here. We will try to reach the closer ship, but the corrupted are near."
A distant rumble passed through the curved deck, and Kira felt the strangest dropping, twisting sensation, as if she'd fallen and risen at the same time. It was a similar feeling to jumping into a descending elevator. Then her sense of weight increased to somewhat over 1G, noticeable, but not unpleasant. But she knew they were thrusting at far, far more than 1G.
"This must be the gravity of the jelly's homeworld," she realized.
"Jesus Christ," said Hawes. "Look at our altitude."
Kira checked her overlays. Her local coordinates were going crazy, as if the computer couldn't decide where exactly she was nor how fast she was moving.
"Artificial gravity has to be messing with our sensors," said Nishu. "Can you get a signal out?" said Falcone, his face pinched with worry.
Hawes shook his head.
"Everything's jammed."
"Damn it. No way to tell where we're heading."
Kira focused on Wernacker. The alien had a white streak across its central carapace that made it easy to single out.
"Kira here, can we see what's happening outside the ship?"
With one tentacle, the jelly caressed the wall.
"Wernacker here, look then."
A curved patch of hull turned transparent. Through it, Kira could see the coin-sized disk of Nidus shrinking into the distance. Explosions flared along the terminator line, bright flashes reminiscent of the fluorescent discharges of lightning sprites. Even from so far away, the resulting auroras were visible, laced across the top of the turbulent atmosphere. Kira searched for other ships, but if any were present, they weren't close enough to spot with the naked eye. Not that that meant much in space.
"How long to reach the Wallfish?" she asked.
The entropists were the ones to answer. "If we are thrusting at the same
acceleration generally observed among the jellies, and given the prior distance to the Wallfish, no more than 5 or 10 minutes.
Nielsen sighed, and the joints of her power armor squealed as she sank into a crouch. She was still holding Trigg's rigid form.
"Do we really have any chance of getting out of the system?"
The light within the room flashed, and the near scent of alarm suffused the room, clogging Kira's nostrils.
"Wernacker here, we have corrupted in pursuit,"
Kira told the others, and then they sat in silence, waiting, while the ship's rocket strained. There was nothing else they could do. Outside the window Wernacker had created, the stars swung in crazy arcs. But the only centrifugal force Kira felt was a slight pull in the direction of their turns. As they'd seen at 61 Cygni, the nightmares could out-accelerate even the jellies. That implied a level of technology that only a highly advanced interstellar civilization could possess, which just didn't seem to match with the creatures they'd been seeing.
"Don't judge by appearances," Kira cautioned herself. For all she knew, the ravening, animal-like nightmares with the shark teeth were as intelligent as a ship mind.
A burst of silvery chaff glittered through the window. A poof of chalk followed a moment later, obscuring the view for a few seconds. Koyich and Hawes were murmuring together. Kira could tell they were preparing to fight. Then the ship jolted underneath them, and her gorge rose as for a moment she felt yanked along all three axes at once. The artificial gravity rippled, producing a feeling of rolling compression throughout her body, before cutting out entirely. The lights flickered. Finger-sized holes stitched their way across the inside of the bulkhead, and a dull boom echoed through the hull. Alarms began to shriek, loud even over the hiss of escaping air. Kira stayed where she was, clinging to the wall, uncertain of what else to do. The ship jolted again. A white-hot circle appeared on what had just been the ceiling. And seconds later, a disc-shaped section of the hull flew inward.
"Form up!"
Koyich shouted,
as a dense swarm of nightmares poured into the jelly ship.